We're live. Neil Brennan in the middle of tweeting. What are you doing?
I'm using my Samsung Galaxy.
Oh, S6 Edge right now. Oh, it's a beautiful phone.
Hi, thanks.
It's me. Your voice is so commercial.
Thanks very much.
You were on stage the other night in the belly room, and we were in the green room. We're like, his voice is so commercial. Like, it sounds like that goddamn commercial. I'll never be able to separate the two now.
I know.
I shouldn't say that commercial. I should say that series of commercials. How many of those fucking things have you done?
You know what? I don't know. Probably 30.
Jesus!
I just do sessions, and then they do whatever they want.
At least you do other shit, man. If you were just doing that and then you became the Verizon guy, you know? Can you hear me now? Like that guy? That guy's fucked.
Yeah.
He's fucked.
The Dell? You're getting a Dell?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that guy's fucked.
Yeah.
How about the girl? The insurance girl?
It's always Flo.
Is that her name?
Flo. Yeah, but they at least they keep making those. She is fucked once she's done, though.
Yeah.
But she's probably made a killing by this point.
Hopefully.
But is it worth it?
They become that person. Flo? But that guy from that fucking commercial that always gets in the accidents and falls down and gets hurt, you know, that handsome gentleman?
Yeah, they cast him in a lot of shit.
He's in movies, too.
Yeah.
He's always in movies. He was in John Wick. He's been...
John Wick was good, right?
Fuck yeah, it was good.
I've heard it's good. I just haven't watched it.
I mean, it's no, like, brilliant, like, super creative, undeniable work of art. But it's fun as shit as far as, like, a really wild, crazy entertainment.
It's just, it's like crazy action sequences, right?
The craziest.
Because the guy who directed it was a fight coordinator, apparently.
Yeah.
So he just had ideas for, like, the shit, the ideas he'd never given people, I think.
Oh.
And so he was like, so he just saved it. He basically sandbagged.
He must have.
Yeah, he sandbagged everyone he worked for and then unleashed it.
Well, doesn't that work with, like, writers? Like, you're a writer. Doesn't that work with writers sometimes? Like, if you see, like, especially, like, writers that are writing for someone else, like a monologue or something like that?
I know what you're getting at. No, I mean, like, look, I don't... There's certain jokes that, like, if I'm writing for, like, Rock or something, it's usually for, like, the BET Awards.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, like... I would have done that. I would have done that topical joke about Usher, like fucking in my. It's like that's the thing about monologues. It's like they're pretty disposable. But yeah, I know.
Every now and then,
people on SNL that sucked as writers and they became cast members, and then all of a sudden they had a lot of good ideas.
They just stored them all like squirrels.
Yeah, just like just totally sandbag people.
Yeah, because comics are like inherently kind of self-obsessed, you know, and the idea of like writing selflessly for someone else and making them much better.
I was talking to somebody about this yesterday. The fact that it's an accepted thing in comedy, that it's just the accepted cast system, that Rock is basically saying like, hey, I'm funnier than you. And I'm hosting a show, so fucking give me jokes.
Is that what he's saying? That's what the world's saying.
I don't think it's that explicit. There is, at the same time, there's something flattering about the fact that, like, one of the best comics wants me to write. It's like, great.
Yeah.
But there's also something about, like, you, come here, rub my back. I gotta go, hey, other MMA fighter, come rub my back. You're not in this fight. I'm ranked higher than you, so come rub my back. And he's just like, okay. You get paid, and it's fun, and all that stuff.
I don't think of it that way at all. I think of it as, first of all, for
honestly,
him,
I don't either.
I know you don't. It's very intelligent for him, because it's a smart way to do it, and a lot of people don't do it that way. They don't bring in other people to help them, and their work can kind of suffer.
Yeah.
You know? Like, he's pretty smart in that way, that he's like looking at it objectively, like there's other strong people around. If I bring them in, it'll make my already strong act even stronger.
He doesn't do it for his act, he'll do it for
monologues.
TV shows.
Yeah. Monologues.
And so it's not. And the other thing with Rock is it's generally you write stuff for him and send it to him so that he can be confident in his shit.
Mm.
So you're like, okay, my shit's better than this. Like, which is fine.
Well, you just need like a giant mound of shit to chop away at, and then you find like where the gems are.
Yes.
If you only have like a few like pretty decent ideas and you're trying to build them up, that's way less effective than an enormous catalog of ideas, and you get to cherry pick the best ones.
Yeah, that's what Rock always says. He's like, I have comedy writers around the way rappers have gold chains. Like, that's all he spends his money on. You know what I mean? Like, if he's not gonna buy a chain, he's like, I'll just have a writer write for fucking a movie with me or something.
That's smart.
Yeah.
Well, that's why he's Chris Rock. He's got his effective strategy for optimizing all of his shows and all of his sets and all, you know, he knows what the fuck he's doing.
The thing that I was, when you were saying about having other people come in and look, I find that a lot of guys, comedian-wise, when you get to the theater level, it's basically all your audiences are henpecked. All of your audiences are predisposed to like you. Mm-hmm. Do you ever, and what I found is a lot of people, when they go to theaters, their act either plateaus or gets worse. Do you ever specifically go to rooms where they don't know you're coming so you can get a better read on shit?
Yeah, well, I do a lot of sets during the day, like regular sets at the Improv or the Store, where they're there to see a mm-hmm. wide variety of people. I do a lot of those. I think those are important. I think sets at the Store are important, period, because it's a fucking jaded group down there. It's beautiful and magical, but it's jaded.
Yeah, it's the hardest room in the world.
The Belly Room?
Yeah.
You might as well be doing stand-up for one person.
I mean, 100%.
The people are right in front of you.
The worst part of a Belly Room is there's people to the right mm-hmm. that could just charge the stage.
They're right there.
They're fucking right
there.
They
just sprint at you.
Yeah.
Well, it's also, they have, you know, it's great, though. Like, what we're saying, you know, about the thing, like, the worst part of it. But even the worst part about it is magic. Because that room is fucking magic, man. That Belly Room, if you get something to work in that Belly Room... We were talking about this last night, that there's the Belly Room and the Ice House. And the Ice House is maybe the best club ever.
It's got the rep, and having done it, it's like the easiest club.
Easiest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's just set up perfect.
Yeah.
The ceiling is low. Everyone's stuffed in there. It's very contagious laughter. It's great acoustics. It's all wood everywhere. The laughter really reverberates. And it's got... whatever the fuck, 50 years of comedy burned into the walls. It's the oldest club in the country. I think it's older than 50 years old, isn't it? I think it's like 55 years old or something like that. But it's essentially the oldest comedy club on earth, because the oldest clubs for comedy were in America. It's the oldest one in America. So it's the oldest, longest running club ever. So it's a super rare place, but it's way easier than like the OR or especially the Belly Room. It's a different kind of...
Louis was saying in an interview, like, when he's in L.A., he'll do, like, an alternative show, then he'll do the Improv or the Laugh Factory, and then he'll do the Store. And he's like, if it works, he's like, everything will work at Alternative Room, some stuff will work at the Improv, and one thing will work at the Store. And the one thing that works at the Store, he keeps.
That's smart.
Yeah.
You need all of those, because when I was just doing the Store only, I think my act suffered a little bit. I think
where does it go? Because that's the thing; it's hard to.
Mean.
What is the psychographic of the Store? You think they? Because I still couldn't tell you, having been working there 6-7 years, I still couldn't tell you like the psychology of that kind of part of the average of the audience's collective unconscious kind of thing.
Well, first of all, let me just say this: it's way better now. The mm-hmm. second, mm-hmm. my second run at the Store from 2007 on, I wasn't there. So I started up again December 14. Mm-hmm. It's way better. It's just better. It's a better club. The young guys coming up are better. There's a mm-hmm. better vibe. The audiences are better.
Yeah.
When I was there in the early 2000s, man, I was a war zone.
It was all old timers, right? I mean, it was all comics were old.
But it was also the audience was just like monsters. There was a lot of monsters.
Like rapey?
Dumb, heckly, drunky, no crowd control at all. They have real crowd control now.
Yeah.
They'll kick people out if they're retarded.
Yeah.
They didn't used to do that.
They'll kick people out if they say 8 things.
Yeah. You have to say 8.
Yeah, you have to say fucking 8 any of these clubs. Like, no, we're good. It's fucking get them out. They're not going to. If they say more than one thing, get them out.
They kicked a guy out at the Ice House last night. He started like... early on this one bit, he would kept yelling the same thing out while the bit was going on. I figured, let me ignore him. And then we got to the end of the bit, and he's still yelling out the thing. I'm like, I heard you, you fuck. And he's like, well, no, I was talking about the thing on your podcast. I go, we're not having a conversation. It's a fucking show.
Yeah.
And then he keeps going. I'm like, oh, fucking Christ. And then when the bouncers come over to take him away, he goes, are you serious? Like,
I was helping.
What do you think? They just picked you?
Yeah.
They just randomly picked a guy and decided to fuck with him.
That's what I said the other day to a woman who was yelling. I go, do you go to fucking Katy Perry concerts, sit at the bottom of the stage and just sing along with her? Shut the fuck up. Like, I don't need your help. They didn't book the show and go, those four guys, and then hopefully someone will come and heckle them.
Yeah, but a Katy Perry concert, if you go and sit there and sing along with her, it's probably flattering.
She can't hear you, but if you're at the foot of the stage... doing it, it's probably
the worst would be if you were saying, don't sing that song.
Yes, precisely.
Don't you have another song? What's
John
your
Mayer
best song?
Was telling me the name drop was saying that the biggest issue at his shows now, girls running to the foot of the stage, turning their back to him, and taking a selfie.
Oh, no.
He said if he has security to, like, stop it. It's like, if I didn't stop it, there'd be hundreds of people every show.
Wow.
And it's hugely distracting because there's a thing darting at the thing you're looking at.
Yeah. Well, don't you find it distracting when you look out into the crowd and you see, like, 10 phones up taking photos of you?
Yeah.
Or taking a selfie or taking a picture. Hey, here I am with Neil Brennan Show.
Yeah. Killing it. Hashtag killing it.
Hashtag winning. Hashtag tiger blood. I mean, there's so many people who want to take pictures now that Hannibal Buress did some weird thing at one of his shows where they have some new technology. It's like a pouch, and they give you this pouch, you close it, and when you're inside the club, the pouch doesn't open.
Yeah.
Like, so you can't get to your phone.
Yeah.
So if your phone rings, if you feel like you must answer it, you have to leave the venue, and then the pouch will open. I guess it works on some sort of a frequency, like if you're past a like one of those electronic dog collars, you know, those things. So it's something like that. And but man, the reaction to it was like, fuck you. I was reading all the reaction, although I tweeted it.
Yeah.
You know, because I saw the story. I'm like, this is kind of interesting. I wonder how people feel about this. Not that I would implement it. I feel like the Streisand effect is in effect. You know, the Streisand effect. You know what that is? Barbara Streisand, they found her house, and they put her house online. Like, they, you know, like someone took a photo of it, and like, this is where Barbara Streisand's house is. And so she, you know, was offended. She made this big deal, and she's like, fuck you, take my house down, this and that. And because she put so much effort into fighting the fact that her house was down, way more people knew about her house.
100%.
And they all attacked and went after her. I think if you tell people you can't bring your cell phone to my show, then they start wearing
GoPros.
That's
all I'm going to think about. Yeah.
They put a GoPro on, or they, you know, they'll film from a fucking one of those glasses that has the lens in the center.
Oh, have you had that at the show?
No.
I had a guy, Google Glasses,
Glasses.
The Laugh Factory, and I go, dude, I can't fucking, I don't know if you're taping.
Right.
So, you're just being a dick.
Right.
Because it's all I can think about now is this fucking dude with a visor in my peripheral vision, and he could be fucking periscoping it now.
Can you periscope from Google Glass?
I don't know. I think Google Glass might even be dead. Do you periscope this show?
I do periscope things, but no, not the show.
How come? You want to? Where? I want to tweet about this, by the way. Where should people go?
The show?
Yeah.
I already tweeted it.
Okay.
Just go to mine and retweet it if you need to. Right. You're a bit addicted to that phone.
No, hold on.
You
let
can't
me
put
just,
that fucker
let
down.
Let me just get it over with. I'm just thinking about it.
Guess it's just a taste.
Joseph.
Just a taste, baby.
No,
it's ironic.
I got it.
You're a commercial actor for a cell phone company, and you're addicted to cell phones.
The snake is
interesting.
Eating the tail.
Right, wrapping around you. Neil.
All right, come retweeting. Deeper.
Why aren't you periscoping, Neil?
All right, all set.
You pushed it away.
Yeah.
I love it. It's out of range. Is it haunting you right now? That's out of range? No. Mm-mm. Sometimes it haunts me. I put my phone over there. But what if there's something important happening right now in the world of van to four-wheel drive conversions?
The cell phone thing, someone was telling me when you go, again, this isn't my name drop. When you go to Drake's house, when girls come over, he makes everyone turn their cell phones in.
Really?
Yeah.
Smart.
Yeah. Because they're going to want to take a picture.
Of course.
And it's just like, no, you can't do it.
So he makes them like put it in a bucket or something?
I don't know the specifics of it, but.
It's a good move.
Yeah.
Smart. Should have a vault.
Smart safe.
Put your phone. Yeah. Why is a table in the vault? That's where your phone goes.
Yeah.
What? But everybody puts their phone on the table.
You want to stay? You want to stay or go? Yeah.
No phones. No phones, baby. But how are we going to take a selfie, Drake?
I got it, baby. I got it.
Well, you have to have, if you're like one of those big time baller rapper characters and you're trying to keep everything on the DL, or at least keep as much of your private life private as possible, you got to take like some serious precautionary steps.
Yeah.
I've heard of guys like having prenups, or not prenups, but, you know,
non-disclosures. Oh.
Yeah.
Not everybody, but like, that's a common thing. Like, I've heard things where, like, you can't even be in the bedroom with the person until you've signed an NDA.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, if you're worried about a fake rape accusation, that's the way to deal with it.
100%.
But then the girl could say, well, I was, like, thinking we were going to make out, and as soon as I signed it, he just started raping me.
Yeah. Yeah, and then it's like, well,
yeah,
but you said you wouldn't say it. But look here, honey, I'm in a tough spot because you said, yeah, you just, I think they assume, like, once I sign this,
yeah,
not like all bets are off, but I think they just assume.
I don't know, man. I would think that, yeah, I guess.
If you're Michael Jordan, though.
Yeah.
What do you do? You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. what do you, have to.
Well, those guys, when you're worth as much money as a guy like Michael Jordan, you become not just a human being, but an opportunity.
Yeah.
Like a
you're a multinational mm-hmm. corporation.
Yeah.
Walking around. And
a billion
people are
dollars
looking
with a hard
to
on.
Do slip and fall accidents and charge you with it.
Oh, absolutely.
Completely.
100%. Right? You've got to think that that is, he's a target in that sense. Whereas if you're worth that kind of money, people look at you and they go, look, if I sue this motherfucker for $100 million.
If things go badly, I get five.
Yeah. I mean, he might give me $500,000 just to shut the fuck up.
Yep.
And then, boom, you're out the door with $500,000 and, you know, nothing really even happened to you. And there's a bunch of people that do that over and over and over mm-hmm. and over and over.
Michael Jordan probably gets sued every day.
Really?
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, between the corporation and the, just every, like, there's, yeah.
Wow. Isn't that fucked?
Yeah.
I was reading about this one guy who was involved, I forget what the case, but it turned out that he had sued, like, dozens and dozens of people for, like, he's a professional lawsuit
mm-hmm.
litigator or lawsuit
yeah.
Claimant,
yeah.
Whatever the fuck it is.
Some shit.
And this guy just does that. He, like, goes from one to the next, tries to figure out how to make some money, and then sues this guy, and then sues that guy for fraud, and this guy for fraud. Like, you know, that's a creepy abuse.
There's
of our
a
legal
music
system.
Company like that just will go after the slightest infraction.
Really?
And they yeah, it's like they're like endemic. They're known in the music industry. They will sue you. It's like Commodore Music or some shit, and they'll just go after fucking. The slightest, it kind of sounds like this, and it holds people up, and people just settle.
Well, every now and then, when one does get through, like that song that was like...
Blurred Lines, yeah.
Yeah, like Marvin Gaye.
Yeah.
I mean, that is exactly... Like, how the fuck did they not know that people are going to see that?
I think there's so much copying in the music business that I think they were just like, yeah, it's just kind of like so-and-so sounds just like fucking that song. You know what I was listening to? I was listening to a podcast. I can't remember what it was the other day, but they were playing Bob Dylan songs that were stolen, that Dylan stole.
What?
Because he was doing all folk songs. So it was all sort of public domain, but he was taking other people's melodies and then making them, changing the lyrics, and those became hits for him.
Really?
Yeah. It blew my mind because you go, Bob Dylan of all people. He's like, the poet laureate of the fucking
the most
20th
creative.
Century. Yeah. Just
no
as much
shit.
As anybody else, yeah. George Harrison got sued for two different songs.
Was it My Lost Guitar? Was that one of them?
They were both hits. One was like, I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing. I think he did one that, I think Coke did it before him. And then
really?
He did something that sounded like, and lost that. I believe, I could be wrong, but.
I Like to Buy the World of Coke?
Yeah.
That was before I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing?
No, no, that's the same song.
Oh.
I'm confused. Don't know what George Harrison's was, but I know that he lost two lawsuits.
But the Thin Lines one, after all the different lawsuits and all the different people that have been sued for stealing lines in songs or, mm-hmm. Stealing melodies, you would think that they wouldn't think that they could pull that off.
Yeah, I was surprised they won, to be honest with you.
Really?
Yeah, I was surprised they won because you can make a case it's different enough.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay,
it's not
let's
the
play
same.
It. Let's play it back.
It's not
to back.
The same tempo.
Oh, okay. Maybe I was wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we need to listen to it. I know they did another one. They tried to go after him for another Marvin Gaye song.
Oh yeah, Robin Thicke. Yeah,
but that one's like much more shaky.
Yeah.
Than this one.
But, and Pharrell's a creative guy, so it's not like they're dealing with some hack. And he wrote the whole thing.
Is it possible that Pharrell's a little bit of a hack?
Look, anything's possible, Jeff.
Anything is possible.
Anything's
possible.
I mean, everyone's a little bit of a hack, I guess, but like
Bob Dylan's a little bit of a hack.
Precisely. None of us are safe.
None of us are safe.
If Bill Cosby's raping, what chance do the rest of us have?
Is that the biggest shock that you've ever heard in all your years of
No. You know why?
Why?
Because I met him 20 years ago and he was a fucking dick. And when his show started, the sitcom, I was like, I don't like that guy.
Really?
I promise you. As a 10-year-old, I was like, I don't like that guy. It's just a fucking egomaniac. I knew it from the minute. I mean, I'm rarely that right about something. Rarely do I not like someone and they turn out to be like a serial rapist. But usually you're just kind of a dick. But to become a, I was like, yeah, that totally
so
makes sense.
So before you ever met him, you yeah. had this, you'd made him.
Yes.
You figured it out.
Never liked the sitcom. Thought I was crazy.
Really?
Yeah. When I went to college, NYU, there was an essay in some English lit book explaining what the formula for the show was, which was the kids have an original idea, an original desire, an original idea, and then Bill Cosby spends the episode chopping them down. And it was like, yeah, that's exactly what every episode was.
Wow.
And I hated it just as a kid. I'm like, fuck this guy. Fuck him. Like, let him have a fucking, let Ruby or whatever, Rudy have a fucking, let her get a pet. Or whatever she wanted.
So you met him?
Yeah.
And what? How long after you saw the show did you meet him?
I met him in 1993 at the Arsenio Hall show, the original.
Really?
Yeah. And
so did we know each other then?
Yeah. It was after I mean, we hadn't seen it, but it was like after I was a doorman,
right.
Moved out here, and went to, and met the woman who worked at Arsenio and through Dave and whatever. So she was like, and whenever there's somebody cool on, she's like, come and meet so-and-so. So met him, and he was talking about slavery, and he was like, it was me, him, and two black dudes. And he goes, Bill Cosby goes, and then the Dutch man came and pointed at me, and I was like, I'm not Dutch. But he was like, you know, close enough. But the fact that he would point at me, I was like, we're not, you know, I'm not, what are the odds I'm fucking Dutch? And the fact that he just like pointed at me and was, and he's a preternaturally, like, wildly smug guy.
Really?
Wildly smug, yeah.
Huh.
Like, you know, smart guy, but not as, he's one of those guys who'll talk and then say, in other words, four times.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, you're making the same point four different, like, I got it the first time.
Right. To impress himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In my experience, yeah.
Yeah, smug, like, really smug people, like, God damn it. Like, what are we doing here? Are we wrestling or are we having a conversation?
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing
here? They're not, you're not there.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who they're talking to. You're just a warm, you're just like a, if they're the predator, you're just like fucking red.
Mm.
Like, you're just the thing that they're talking at.
Yeah.
And
the heat signature.
Yeah. You're a walking heat signature. That they just fucking, yeah.
Well, that to me was the only thing that made sense about this. It's like, how could someone drug somebody like that? And then I thought about it and I was like, I bet if you have lived decade after decade of people just kissing your ass and everyone around you is like some weird form of a yes man. Like, you have a whole industry behind you. Like, when he's on the show, like, think about, he has all the production assistants mm-hmm. and the producers and the executive producers and the cameramen and the sound guys and the makeup people, and everyone is just,
yeah,
Mr. Cosby, and that's your existence. And you get on stage in front of that crowd, and you're making this show
and
for America.
And he's a fucking killer comedian.
Mm-hmm.
He's a fucking killer. I don't like the guy, and I'm
right.
saying he's a killer.
And do you think that you just developed this sort of like really distorted psychotic view of yourself in relationship to the rest of the world?
I don't think so, because he's the first famous person that's, I think he had the pathology before he was famous. The idea that I've never heard of a famous person like, oh yeah, so my shit now is mm-hmm. I got to the drug bitches and rape them when they're asleep level. Like, that's not a level.
No.
That's not like a known. So,
right.
So, I think it was a thing that he had. In some ways, I don't feel bad for him, but what do you do? You know, any sexual desire you have, you're eventually going to do. You can quell it for four nights.
So you're saying, like, if you have that,
what do you do?
Kind of creeper desire.
Like, there was a This American Life about a guy who was a pedophile. He was 19. He was a pedophile. Wanted to, had sexual feelings for like 10 and 12 year old boys, hadn't acted on it. And it's like, what do I do?
Jesus Christ.
What do you do? That's like when people go so and so, like prostitutes, whatever, it's like, or transvestite, whatever, it's like, poor him. Like, yeah. In some ways, it's like your dick makes you do awful shit. So I believe he had that before he was famous or anything. Because I don't think it's, yeah.
I wonder if that part is that this was a more commonly accepted practice. Because he had a bit that he used to do about Spanish fly.
Yeah, yeah.
You know that bit?
Yeah.
I wonder if, like, people didn't think that it was that big of a deal or as big of a deal as they think of now. Like, maybe people didn't think of hitting someone with a Mickey. That's what they used to call it. They had a cute little name for it. Whereas now, it's like drug rape.
Yeah.
You know?
To me, that Spanish fly argument was a... That just sounded like one of those... Remember back in the day bits? Like, remember Speak and Spell? It's like one of those bits for his generation. But... Yeah, I think it was way more like there was. I was reading about one of the girls who lived at Hugh Hefner's house, and he offered her a Quaalude and said, "Back in the old days, they used to call these leg openers, thigh openers." And it's just like, I believe it. I believe that they used to call them thigh openers. Yeah, it's like, women even 30 years ago didn't have a lot of rights. Like sexual harassment, I don't think the first sexual harassment suit was till at the earliest it was the late 70s.
It's amazing how much things have changed and how quickly things have changed. We were reading yesterday on the podcast. Was it yesterday? Day before yesterday? This speech by Lincoln when he was debating in like 1858, debating the rights of black people. Mm-hmm. And even Lincoln back then was saying that he didn't think that they should be allowed to serve on juries or vote or even intermarry with whites. Like,
yeah.
And it was like, whoa, like that's not that long ago, man.
He thought that they were 4/5 of a person. It's like, you're not 3/5, but you're not 5/5 either.
And, you know, the argument is, well, you have to put it into context. Like during his time, this was revolutionary.
Yeah, that was progressive.
It was incredibly progressive.
Yeah.
That's not that long ago, man.
No. That's not long ago at all.
That's not even 200 years ago.
What's cool is the period that we're living in now is you can get rights. I mean, this shit is like the gay rights movement and the trans rights. I mean, I've never seen a movement like this. Them get traction, rights, vote. Like, just
the marriage thing's amazing.
Yeah.
They're starting to get gay marriage all over the country. It's like popping up, pop.
Yeah, because it was stupid anyway, but...
Well, first of all, let's be honest. Marriage is pretty fucking stupid.
Retarded.
And this is coming from a married person.
Yeah.
The idea of, like, you're going to sign a contract with someone based on romance?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I get it. I get that you'd want it. You'd want some sort of security. But if you're gay and you can't even make people, you can't even get pregnant, okay? Yeah. Unless you guys figure out how to, you have to get a surrogate, or you're talking about... You know, maybe friends that are also lesbians that want a kid, and like, I'll tell you, we'll have two kids. You give me one, and I'll like, what the? How do you work it out?
Yeah.
That they're going to be your kids.
Yeah. But it wasn't about that. It was about like you also couldn't visit your gay lover in the hospital.
Exactly.
You couldn't get
insurance rights, all that stuff. No, look, even if you don't want to get married, it's equality. You know, you want to be able to, you don't want a fucking law that says a man can't marry another man that he loves.
Yeah.
That's gross and stupid. And the fact that was common until like really recently.
Yeah. And the argument standard. Being like, cause it ain't right. That's not a fucking, it ain't right. It's not a legal argument.
It's still being going on today. These guys that are running for Republican office, there's, it's still happening today.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Rick Santorum was just talking about it recently. All these fucking dummies. What is that guy? Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
That fucking dummy doesn't believe in it.
They're all just going to lose. like, you fucking dumbasses.
There's enough people that cling to that stupidity that are still on their side for now. They're like the last fucking Confederate flag holdouts.
And is there or is there not something in the Bible about it? Because I've heard two different
arguments.
Men
are not supposed to lie down with men. That's an abomination. That's what it says. But says who? You're dealing with multiple translations of a book that was bullshit.
Years ago,
Well, not only this, more than 2,000 years ago. The oldest versions of the Bible that we know of today are the Dead Sea Scrolls. And the Dead Sea Scrolls, the only version of the Bible that's in Aramaic. And when they try to translate it, like, the stories are similar but different. There's all sorts of wacky shit in the Dead Sea Scrolls that, like, isn't in any of the other books, any of the other religious texts. And then you get to the oldest version of the Bible. It's all in ancient Hebrew. Who the fuck speaks ancient Hebrew? You got to translate that to Latin, and they translate that to Greek, and a lot of shit gets missing in the process. When they wrote ancient Hebrew, too, ancient Hebrew letters and numbers were interchangeable. Like, words had numerical value to them. Like, there was no number. So the letter A was also the number one.
Yeah. So it could mean anything.
Then, well, it's just such a different context. There's a different meaning to everything they were saying. Like the word God and the word love, they have the same numerical value. And numerical values are actually important in the when you're saying a sentence. You know how you say a sentence? There's tone, there's sarcasm, you can see things in it.
That's why texting is hard to...
Exactly. Yeah. Are you mad at me? Like, no, man, we're fucking around. You know, sometimes people don't know.
No, I'm mad at you.
Yeah, well, easy. But in ancient Hebrew, apparently, it's hard for us to put it into perspective and kind of understand the way they communicated. But when they wrote things down, there was inherent numerical quality to the sentences. They had like a sum. It was those sentence had numbers to it. And I don't think we're...
There are 50 arguments against why the Bible is real. Mm. And there's one pro argument, which is, I like it.
Yeah.
Makes me feel good. That's the only argument you can give.
Well, the idea that God would write one book a long time ago, tell one dude, and then go off to manage grasshopper populations and make sure hurricanes happen. Like, where have you been, man? How come you don't tell us again? Yeah. Don't you understand there's 30 different versions of this? Wouldn't you want to clear it up?
Yeah, you're a dick at this point.
Like, if you made a quote, like if there was a controversial issue that came up, you know, and you made a quote, and then a bunch of people took that quote and butchered it and twisted it up 15 different ways to Sunday, and you were aware of it, wouldn't you want to correct that? Wouldn't you want to come back and go, whoa. I didn't say you have to eat babies that are the color of orange. Yeah. That is not what I said. Like, you guys fucked the whole thing up.
Yeah.
But not this God guy.
Yeah.
He's like, I told you.
Yeah.
I told you.
Yeah, I told you once. I'm not going to tell you again. Yeah.
But what are all these people that are lying about what you said? You got to figure out who's lying.
It's not my fault. Not my problem.
It's not my game, bro.
Yeah. You believe in a God?
I don't not believe. I think it would be super arrogant to say I don't believe in God. I've seen so many things on psychedelic drugs that don't make any sense at all. And I'm like, why would I ever be so cocky as to think that I have the whole framework of the universe spelled out? It's purely speculation, even for scientists. Like, for scientists, and scientists are studying the very nature of matter itself, down to subatomic particles and quasars and supernovas and gas clouds and all these different things they're studying. At the end of the day, all they are really truly aware of is what they can perceive with their own senses in this existence. They don't know what happens when you die. They don't know if it's just a gateway to another new, completely different kind of experience. They don't know. And the idea that it's not, that it's just death and it's black and it's darkness. Well, where did you come from in the first place? Why are you even here? Why are you even here as a conscious entity? Like, why is the idea of you thinking about you, that is a real thing? Like, what purpose does it serve? And why does it exist? And is it possible that this whole thing is just a long process? Sort of like a seed goes into the ground, water gets on that seed, this seed sprouts, pops through the ground, becomes a tree, the tree gives fruit, the fruit drops fruit, that fruit goes into the ground, becomes new trees, animals eat those trees.
So we're nutrients for the next generation.
We're a part of this weird, crazy ecosystem, and the ecosystem that has created a human being with all their creativity and self-awareness and all their ability to reflect and change and this crazy desire for innovation, like to have the newest, greatest shit, the biggest, coolest thing, the fastest thing, the smartest thing, the most advanced thing. We're constantly searching for this newer, better product. It would seem to me that all of that is a part of some almost inescapable process of change and improvement and change. It seems like the whole thing is always changing, right? Like a cloud forms, or rather a planet forms out of clouds and dust and all kinds of shit, and eventually turns into a planet, eventually acquires water, eventually has an atmosphere, and then life comes out of it, and that life spreads out into other planets, and all of it seems to be this constant state of either improvement or death. Improvement and death. Improvement and death. And to say that it's not building towards something, it's like, how the fuck do you know? How do you know? I mean, we literally might be building towards heaven. And if human beings, with all of our interest in trans rights and gay rights and being progressive, I really contemplate this a lot. I think about this all day. I wonder if what we're doing by this movement that you say, it's like some of it's exaggerated and ridiculous, and some of the people that are involved in it are ultimately like really shitty people that have attached themselves to an interesting idea. But the trend seems to be inescapable. And the trend of technological innovation, as well as the trend of social awareness, they might, if you extrapolate and you look at where they're going, like 1,000 years from now, 100,000 years from now, it might reach a point of a really like a technologically created heaven. I mean, it is totally possible.
A technologically created heaven,
yeah.
Created by human beings?
It's created by whatever the fuck fuels a human being. I mean, we look at it as us, like human beings. We did it. But what, right. What is a human being? I mean, there's a bunch of different instincts and a bunch of different desires that are sort of sewn into the existence of being a person. And they're inexorable. You know, you have them if you're living in the jungle. You have them if you're living in the city. People just have this weird, inescapable desire to do a bunch of core things. Well, maybe those core things are very important and key ingredients towards creating technology and towards creating awareness and connection of ideas and information from entity to entity until the entire thing thinks as one. So the entire thing thinks as one and has massive technological capabilities and literally can escape the very dimension that it's currently trapped in. The dimension that it thinks is all that there is. This is all that there is because I can knock on it with my knuckles and I can put it on a scale and I can run a tape measure by it and tell you exactly how long it is. So that's what is real. But that's not even what's real. That's what's real right now that you can experience. And we might be a part of one continual, never-ending cycle that ultimately leads to God.
Yeah. Yeah, possible. That's the thing. I don't find
just
it arrogant to say I don't believe.
I don't think so either. I think it's arrogant to say you know there's no God.
Oh, yeah. I don't think anyone knows there's no God. Yeah,
but say I don't believe in God.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't believe in God either. But I don't not believe in God.
Right.
Is there a God? I don't know.
Yeah.
I've met some crazy shit in psychedelic trips. You know,
Give me a couple examples if you can.
Well, things that knew everything that I've ever done, everything that I've ever said, and who I was. Exactly. Down to the core.
Things? What do you mean things?
Things. Entities that I can see right through you. Now, what are those entities? Are those entities
this is
like,
in a trip or this
yeah,
is on
in a
human,
trip.
This is like you just
trip.
See this, you meet this guy and he knows everything.
Well, you're not meeting a guy. You're meeting like a geometric pattern
right.
That is like you can't, especially DMT trips, you can't really isolate what something looks like because it only looks like that for the briefest of moments.
Yeah.
And then it changes and looks like something else and it changes. And as you think about what it is, it alters.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like some bizarre lesson in perception and your own definitions of the world around you, that you are in some way, by the way you interface with the world, changing the very nature of the world itself. And this is like some weird lesson that they try to teach you while you're involved in these trips. It seems like they're trying to explain to you it's not just you have a bad attitude, or not just anybody has a bad attitude. It's not just that you go, it's that you get tied up in the momentum of those bad attitudes mm-hmm. and the mistakes caused by those bad attitudes and the energy that's put out and the ripple effect of all that energy and how it goes out into the rest of the population and how it comes back to you and you get trapped like a goddamn spider web. And explains it to you that literally the way that you interface with the world changes the world, changes your world, changes the people that are in your world, but also changes how those people interact with other people in the world. It's this very freaky, fucking bizarre thing to have that be told to you by jesters, like giant, like jesters who have like multi-dimensional heads that's like spin around
honey,
and they're giving you the finger. And
yeah, but I would say that's just your own. It's just your own consciousness.
It may
manifested
be.
As a person.
It may be.
Or an entity or a wall or whatever.
It's totally possible. We don't know what your own consciousness really means.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, look, a human being is not an individual. Every human being is a host of an unnumberable, I mean, like literally an uncountable number of bugs. Like the amount of parasites and the amount of different bacteria. They say there's more E. coli in a person's body than there have ever been people ever. So think of that.
Yeah.
Just to stop and think about. And you need that. If that's not in your body, you're fucked.
Sometimes
if you don't
I
have
think
skin
about
bacteria,
shit like the fact that we even know what E. coli is. Like science is fucking, like the last 70, 80 years, it's just like, what?
Yeah.
How did you even, how the fuck did you get, what?
I had Brian Cox on, the professor who's this brilliant guy who works at CERN, who works at the Large Hadron Collider, and he was trying to explain the searching for the hadron, and searching for the Higgs boson particle, and halfway into the conversation, you're like, where? What?
How did you guys? How? When did you find this out?
Who? What did you do? We're just a couple hundred years away from a guy making fire with steel and flint. That's the only way they made fire. Clink, clink, clink. That's how they had to make fire. And you guys have figured this out?
Yeah.
What the fuck, man?
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
It's really hard to believe.
Yeah.
Very, very, very hard to wrap
what
your
are they,
head around.
What are they going at with the Higgs boson, by the way? Like, what are they trying to figure? What will that lead to?
Well, they're trying to recreate, and they have, apparently, recreated the conditions milliseconds after the Big Bang and prove that there's this one particle that was theoretical up until recently, and they've measured it. They're like 99% sure that they've isolated this particle and measured it. But along the way, they've also identified a bunch of other shit that they weren't sure if it was real, or created some things that were just theoretical. One is a stuff called quark gluon plasma that's insanely heavy. Like, if you had a bowling ball full of this stuff, it would be heavier than the world.
Yeah.
Like, and they've figured out how to isolate that. And it's also the same sort of thing. It's something that exists, like, milliseconds after the Big Bang. It's like a part of the very creation of the universe itself.
So there won't necessarily be, like, and if this is true, then... Well, then we all get the floating skateboard. Did you see the floating skateboard yesterday?
Yes, I did. Yeah,
fucking unbelievable.
But I pull up
what's
a video
funny
of that,
is how
Jim.
Long it took me to get used to it. Though I'm like, oh, good, there's a floating skateboard now. Like, and you just go back to your dumb life.
Yeah,
you're not like, oh fuck, we gotta get it. Like, you're just like, okay.
Yeah, it'll be totally normal.
Yeah,
I mean, a car is fucking insane. If you didn't have a car and somebody gave you a car, is this it? Lexus has created a real rideable hoverboard. Okay, so here's a guy with a skateboard, and he gets off, and he steps on. It says, there is no such thing as impossible. And it's smoking.
I don't like the smoke. I think that's an after effect, and I think it's stupid.
I thought it's the best part of this ad.
But so never going to smoke.
It's just a matter of figuring out how. So he's going to stand on this now. Lexus hover. They're not showing you any more than that?
No.
That's the tease, you fucks. That's it?
You got to see this new RX, though. This thing.
What is it?
No, I'm just kidding.
I'm a big fan of the Lexuses.
Yeah.
Japanese engineering. It's a little slightly different than the German engineering. All of it's pretty fucking badass, though.
Did you have the 400?
God damn. What's that?
Did you have the 400X, that one?
The Lexus?
Yeah.
No, I have a SUV, the LX 570.
Oh, I had the RX 400. Sorry.
Yeah, they're fucking amazing.
It's like driving a living room.
Yeah, it's huge,
smooth as fuck.
Oh yeah, it's so floaty. It just floats down the highway.
Yeah,
they make amazing automobiles. If you think about the fact that the automobile has only been around for a little over 100 years too, and the amount of innovation that's happened with that.
Yeah, and that's when that's even retarded by other industries. Like it should be further along.
Well, I think with this Tesla shit, like this Elon Musk character getting involved, that guy's making an SUV now that's going to be all electric.
He's making a two-door also.
Mm-hmm.
He's making a bunch of shit. But the bigger thing that he did was he basically gave up all his patents.
Yeah.
He's like, here, just let's make it good.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make this an actual thing.
Well, he's like a real-life Tony Stark type character.
Yeah.
He's got that new thing for the wall, too, new battery system.
For solar.
For houses,
Yeah, because you can't get... The thing that I didn't realize about solar is you can't get it at night unless you store it.
Yeah,
you can't store it. It's really, really hard to store.
Well, most of the time you have these solar rooms. Like there was a cabin that a friend of mine has in Colorado, and she's got these like solar batteries hooked up to the cabin. And, you know, it's like a room. You know, got to go in the battery room, see what's going on. And the batteries were dead. It was fucking up.
Yeah.
And it was a real problem. The guy who was staying in the cabin was like, what the fuck? You know, they have fucking lights. You know, this is stupid. We're camping here.
Yeah.
It just wasn't working correctly. But with this Elon Musk thing, Elon Musk's is very small. It's not that big.
Yeah, it's like half about this like high and like half the table.
Like a small coffee table.
Yeah.
And you can put it on the wall.
Can you put it on the wall?
Yeah.
Really?
That's what it's for, a power wall. Yeah, see how it's up there? It mounts to the wall.
Oh, that's cool.
It's a home battery that charges using electricity generated from solar panels or when utility rates are low and powers your home in the evening. It also fortifies your home against power outages by providing a backup electricity supply.
Pretty yeah, well, that's the sweet. That's the. I have a Volt. I was going to get a Tesla, and I got the Chevy Volt because someone pointed out, what if there's a power outage? I was like, yep, that'll do it.
Yeah. The Volt takes both, right? Is that the deal?
No, the Volt. Yeah, the Volt takes both. I can go to gas. When the revolution comes, I can.
That's a smart move right now. You got your feet in both worlds.
I got a little bit of both, Joe.
Do you, when you put it up with gas, does it charge the battery?
No. It basically, you get 40 miles of electric.
Just pure electric.
Yeah. And then once you.
That's pretty stupid, I'm going to be honest.
Why? What do you mean? 40
miles is not enough.
The average person drives 36 miles a day.
But what about those extra 4 miles that you go to get a sandwich?
Gas,
and then
bro. Just switch over
dies.
To use a drip of gas.
No
it doesn't
more
die.
Gas. No more gas. It's out.
Oh, you're talking
all
about
you
when the revolution comes?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you. You better have a power wall.
You got to have one of them Elon Musk.
Yeah, but even then it's probably. Although, no, if you have the solar.
Well, solar is only going to work as long as the fucking weather stays exactly the same. If you have solar and you live in a place like Columbus, Ohio in the winter, good luck, fuckface.
Yeah.
You're not going to get much power unless they develop some sort of new shit. But if your skies are gray, like where I grew up in Boston, the winter is all gray. So everything's gray. You're not going to match. But maybe those new ones actually can
work. I feel
work.
Like they're better. They got to be getting better with like overcast shit.
But it's not like being out in the desert. It's not like Palm Springs or some shit like that where you could just power the whole world from it.
Yeah. Hopefully that'll happen in the next 15, 20 years.
Well, it's amazing when you look at L.A. I mean, the one resource that we have in abundance is sunshine. I mean, that is the power
and do
resource.
And virtually nothing with it.
Very little.
Yeah.
Because we don't have to. And because the DWP has a fucking monopoly.
Are you worried about the water?
Yes.
Yeah, me too.
How could you not be?
Yeah. Like, I don't know what's going to happen.
Well, we're not going to have much water.
Yeah.
That's going to happen. So
like,
happening.
You think that that's a new normal thing now?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I think it's like essentially we're a giant desert city, and they're going to try.
We're actually admitting what we're like now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, we're a desert city that had intermittent rainfall. But the reason why LA was created in the first place as a Hollywood, as a movie production place, was because it was so consistent with its weather. Yeah. That's the whole. Yeah. I mean, that means you're living in a place that sucks. I mean, it's great for the sun, but it's not good for life.
Well, yeah, we're not supposed to be here.
Yeah.
It's not inhabitable unless you do a lot of shit. Unless you're like, we're going to reroute the Colorado River. It's just like, dude, maybe we just stay near the Colorado River.
Well, what's interesting is with climate change, one of the things I'm keeping an eye on is what happens to Seattle's weather. Because I have a buddy who just moved up to Seattle.
I have a theory about that.
Yeah, and he fucking said this winter was amazing. He was like, dude, it barely rained. It wasn't that cloudy. It was wonderful. And he was coming from Brooklyn.
I think Portland and Seattle become LA.
Mm-hmm.
And Vancouver becomes San Francisco.
Dude, I like the way you think.
Yeah. I think that's in like 50 years.
You're probably dead right. I'm a big fan
of
Seattle.
I've thought about getting property in Vancouver a bunch.
Whoa, you've really committed to this.
I'm really done the research.
Very, very expensive real estate in Vancouver.
Yes. But a lot of beautiful Asian girls as well.
Oh, shit. Someone is thinking
oh,
ahead.
Shit. Someone did
He's
a recon.
Ahead. Well, they're great Canadians. First of all, Canadian girls, they're just
they're reasonable.
Chiller. Yeah, they're more chill. They're fun. Yeah. They're more fun.
Yeah. They're less, I found they've been less...
jaded?
They're less... I don't know. The hottest girls, I have a better chance with hot Canadian girls than I do with hot American girls.
Hmm.
Like, the hottest girls I've dated generally were Canadian.
Really?
Yeah.
You think they're less worried about looks and more worried
I think they're
about...
just worried about... I think they're just more... They actually, like, care if you're nice and cool and shit and decent.
Well, their whole culture is just so different because they didn't come from this marauding, take-over-the-world sort of mentality that the United States has. You know, the United States has this leader of the world, go fuck yourself, America, land of the free, Toby Keith. You know, they don't have that up in Canada. They don't have any of that.
A lot of times I think, like, the military-industrial complex is just because we have the bombs. It's like, well, we got the bombs.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we got the avocados. We got to make some fucking guacamole, man. Like, we fucking paid for the bombs. Let's fucking use these things.
We'll talk about a cycle. That's the big cycle. It's like, you can't not extract that money. The people that are making bombs and the people that are involved in the military, they can't not do that. if they stop.
Yeah, wait, they're not going to stop.
It's too much money.
Yeah, they're not going to stop asking. We just have to stop giving it to them.
Fuck.
What do you make of the thing of like, well, the thing of like lost jobs? Because that's a non-argument to me.
Lost jobs from the military industrial complex?
Yeah, like when we take that away, we're going to, man, I got 8,000 people in my district and all that shit. It's like, well, fucking have them do something else. The same thing with coal. They say that about coal industry. They say it about...
Horseshoes.
Yeah, precisely. It's like, well,
what about the blacksmiths?
Yeah.
You're putting a lot of blacksmiths out of business. Your fancy fucking fancy wagon.
The car. Well, that's the other thing is when computers and robots take over, there will be blue-collar people breaking into factories to beat up the robots.
Probably.
They really will. They'll go in with sledgehammers, and they'll start, which I believe is the... is the definition of a Luddite are people that were so anti robot that they beat them up.
They beat machines up, right? Yeah. Wasn't that really was?
It is so fucking funny.
Yeah, wasn't that during the industrial?
But they're not wrong. Yeah, they're not wrong.
Yeah, that was like during the industrial age, right? Look at this. Member of any bands of English workers who destroyed machinery, especially in cotton and woolen mills, that they believe was threatening their jobs in 1811 to 1816.
That will be a huge thing.
Yeah.
It's like, but Stanhope's, you ever hear Stanhope's bit about like, shouldn't, where they're like, oh, it's only 5% unemployment. It's like, shouldn't we be going for 100% unemployment? Like, don't we all just not want to work? Like, why are we... going toward this fucking dumb work thing when we could just, why don't we all figure it out so none of us have to work?
Because people have associated working with making money and making money with staying alive. And the only way you can contribute is if you work. And the only way you can get money to stay alive is if you work. And that's the one thing that everybody's worried about, right? Everybody's worried about not being able to pay their bills and starving to death and having their children go hungry. And like, fuck, what if we live like the places that we know exist all over the world? This place is all over the world where children go hungry.
Well, there's also that Protestant work ethic thing where it's like it's next to godliness. It becomes one too. God smiled. You know what I mean? Like when the man worked, like that's a huge tenet.
Well, don't you think that that's one of those tenets that those existed because
they
people
backwards.
Were trying to instill this idea of you have to stay alive. And so it's good to work hard. It's nobody wants to fucking farm and plow the fields. But if you don't do it, we're all going to fucking starve.
Yeah.
So let's make it a religious ethic. Let's make it a super important thing that God really likes. And when you plow, God loves it. When you plant seeds, sow the seed, go do it.
Yeah.
God loves it.
Is it even possible to have, would that be possible to have 100% unemployment? Meaning, like, could society, society's based on bartering and trading and...
Yeah, and there's also work that people like to do. What about that? What if you're a dentist and you enjoy doing dentistry? Do you want 100% unemployment? But like, wait a minute, I have all these clients. I enjoy fixing their teeth. What's the fucking
robots,
problem?
Robots, bro.
I went to school for it. I'm fascinated
by
got
robots, mouth. Though. But you didn't go to school.
But...
Yeah, you didn't go to school. You didn't have to do any of that.
What about people that are like car enthusiasts that fix cars? What about people that make clothes that are really into designing clothes?
Yeah, I think you still do it. But the idea that you have to do it to survive, I think it's just an interest. I don't disagree with them.
Hmm.
Like that you'd want someone in this robots, someone would have to make the robots.
Right. That's work, right?
But yeah, at some point, someone's going to have to work in the robots. Even if there's robots making robots... Someone has to service the super robot, you know what I mean? Like, someone's going to have to work, and then that guy is going to want shit for the work he did, and then it just becomes a bartering society.
It doesn't seem like it's ever possible to go to 100%, but you might be able to get down to, like, 10% plus robots.
Yeah.
If you get down to 10% working, 90%
that's
unemployed.
That's an awesome sentence, by the way, blank, blank, plus robots.
Yeah. Because once you got robots in the mix, everything changes. You don't need a whole lot of people to run the robot, because you get robots that fix robots. You know, and then the robots that fix the robots that fix the robots. Who watches the watchmen?
Who watches the watchmen? That is correct. Who robots the robots?
I mean, you would have to make sure that also that the people that did do all the work, that you kept a steady supply of them and kept them educated. Because if you didn't, and then we ran out of people that knew how to fix the robots, and then we're just scrambling. Like, we have to relearn how to fix robots.
There was a book... I think it was White Noise, Don DeLillo, but it talked about, like, I couldn't fucking fix a clock. I couldn't fix a light. I couldn't fix any of it. If something like, if I was the last guy, like, I couldn't fix shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
At all.
Well, you know, I had a whole bit about that, about dumb people, like, not realizing they're dumb because they buy a lot of smart things that other people figured out. Mm-hmm. And then one day the power goes out. And, like, what do you do when the power goes out? Well, what I usually do is I sit around and I wait.
Yeah.
I figure someone's fixing that shit.
Yeah.
And then that person's, but that person's dead and no one would know.
What happened to him?
Yeah. And then the idea of the joke was, if I left you alone alone in the woods with a hatchet, how long before you could send me an email? Like, how long would it take? Nobody knows how to make a fucking computer. Nobody knows how to build an engine. Who the fuck knows how to forge metal?
Yeah.
Pull it out of the ground and turn it into a cast iron
block. I couldn't start a fire. You know what I mean? I couldn't. I mean, it would literally, if I started a fire, it would be based on shit I saw on Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
I swear to God.
I think I could start a fire if I had the right stuff. But you have to make sure you have the right stuff. And it wouldn't be easy. It's not easy at all. Like, you'd have to have rope and a stick and another stick. And then you have to have,
it's like that sort of thing that they do. Yeah, it becomes a bow. And then, like, I don't know when to, like, go over to the thing, to the
kindling
or whatever.
There's a guy on there's a show called Life Below Zero, and this fucking dude doesn't bring matches with him because he doesn't want to rely on matches. Because what if I run out of matches?
Yeah.
What if I rely on a lighter? So he has this mouthpiece that he puts in, and then he has a stick. See if there's a video of it. His name is Glenn. Pull up Glenn from Life Below Zero Makes a Fire on YouTube. And he puts this bit, he has this piece in his mouth, and the piece, like, clamps down on the top of the stick so that he could use the bow with two hands and really get a lot of friction.
Mm-hmm.
So he has the bow that's wrapped around, the string of the bow is wrapped around the stick, and he's going right to left, right to left, right to left, right to left. And as it spins, the friction starts, you see little smoke, and he's pushing, like, dry tinder in there, and then he gets, like, a little ball of fire, and then he builds it up.
If you see it, do you know? If we don't see it, it doesn't?
No, it doesn't take much time.
But you
gotta
carry
the
thing around in your mouth?
Sure, it has to be online. If it's not online, they should be fired.
Here we go.
Here he goes. So this guy, this is how he does it all the time. Give it some volume. So
see, I don't use the headlamp, because what happens if I run out of headlamps?
It's true. If it's 40 below zero. Well, he's filming.
Put this mouthpiece in, it's made out of caribou antler.
This guy's
gonna support it.
Living so gangster up there. So he holds his caribou antler piece in his mouth. Then he wraps a string around this fucker. Watch how he does this. This is pretty wild. So he's pulling right, left, right, left, right, left. And watch how quick it works.
Wow.
Isn't that nuts?
Yeah.
It's incredible. And he has this fire starting thing. And he reuses it over and over again, because the more he does it...
His teeth are ruined, we should point out.
Yeah, his teeth are fucked. Biting on caribou antlers, bitch. What you trying to do? And so then he reuses the little thin plate of wood that he has underneath it. Reuses that over and over again, so it's sort of black and charred, which makes it a little bit more flammable. Isn't that amazing?
That's awesome.
This is how this motherfucker makes a fire. And you saw how quick it was.
Yeah, but Joe, can't he write a joke?
Nope. He's not perfect. He's not the Ubermensch.
Have him write a sketch.
Nope.
See how it is.
Look at you. Well, you think you could do that? Yeah. Hey, strongest man.
Do a fucking strong seven, bro.
Yeah. How about you write for Chris Rock, strongest man?
Yeah, you fucking piece. You fucking jamook.
Oh, great. You could pick up a big stone ball, you fucking dunce. You know what else can do that? A tractor.
Yeah.
You're a human tractor, fuckface.
Yeah.
With basically. No jokes.
Yeah.
Go piece do a tight garbage. Seven. Do Duke. A tight seven. Warm the crowd up.
Yeah, you're warm the crowd up for At Midnight.
Oh.
Do Brody's job.
Enjoy it. 8-1. He yelled out 8-1-8 till I die last night on stage, and the fucking place broke out into applause.
So fucking funny.
He was at the Ice House last night. He was hilarious.
Yeah, he's very funny.
But the yelling out, 8-1-8 till I die.
Yeah.
And the place just went, yes.
Yeah. He's
like,
great.
They know. They know what to expect from Brody Stevens.
I like that he's, like, carved out a little thing for himself.
People have, like, really, like, Kimmel, those kind of guys, like, people who really appreciate Brody have made a big, Zach Galifianakis, too.
Yeah.
Big fan. made a big deal about him. It's nice to see him getting. He still doesn't get the attention that he deserves. I want to do something where we do it in conjunction with the Comedy Store, and we film Brody's late night sets. Just film a gang of them, and then find the gem, find the one gem, and take that and turn it into a comedy special.
Yeah, because that's easy to do.
Yeah, because some of those shows that he does, those late night shows, they're just fucking magical, man. They're just magical shows.
Like, very inspired.
Yeah, just nuts, off the fucking charts, weird.
Yep.
You know, the narratives that he creates in the audience with the various people that he's fucking around with.
Yeah.
All completely ad-libbed, as opposed to those fake ad-lib guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know those fake ad-lib guys? Like,
I know they exist. I haven't caught anyone.
Oh, it's the worst.
Do you know what I mean? Are there some that we know?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a lot. Not that much anymore, because people are getting hip to it.
Yeah.
But there used to be a bunch of guys who every night would pretend, look at this guy, he's thinking,
and she's thinking. Yeah.
Well, he's like, well, and she's like, hmm. But they say the same thing every night, and everybody's like, oh my God, so brilliant.
Yeah.
But it's really an act. Mm-hmm. It's like an act that pretends to be an ad-libbed act.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
Those motherfuckers.
God making, damn it, Neil. How dare they make $61,000 a year?
How dare they, if they're lucky.
Yeah.
So tell me about this fucking thing that you just did. All right. For anybody who doesn't know what ketamine is.
I will tell them. I will tell them the whole narrative. One of the times I was here, we talked about 5-HTP.
Yeah. That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
That got me into it. And that's how when we started creating New Mood.
Yeah. So I'd taken 5-HTP. I basically had depression most of my adult life, probably my whole life. And
when you define depression, like right now, I'm talking to you, we're hanging out, we're having fun, we're laughing, everything seems cool
right now.
You're great.
Yeah.
When does it slip in?
It here's the thing. It's not. It was never suicidal. It was never. It was just like kind of a like the best I could feel. What I could feel was adrenaline and ego. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But it was never like joy, happiness, sort of, you know, like the more fuzzier stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So
just couldn't feel it.
Just didn't happen.
No joy, no happiness.
Not really. Again, not miserable.
Okay, but let me ask you this. While this is going on, and great things would happen.
Yeah.
You. Like, you had some great things happening. First of all, you're the co-creator of the Chappelle Show, which is, in my opinion, the greatest sketch comedy the world's ever known.
Yeah.
So that was a great thing.
Yes.
During that time, was there joy?
There was ego.
Ego.
And there was adrenaline. But there was never... It never felt like... My brain would, like, talk me out of it. It would talk me out of why I should enjoy it, if that makes sense. Like,
huh.
It would talk me out of it, just like, well, yeah, but you got a partner, you got to do some blah, 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 blah.
So your brain would tell you, well, you know, you're doing well, but let's be honest, you're doing it because of Dave Chappelle, mm-hmm. and, you know, even though your writing is really great, would it be so great if Skippy from Family Ties 100%. Was the star of the show would still bomb?
I would say yes, I'm kidding.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, 100%.
No disrespect to Skippy.
Yeah.
So that would...
That's when I knew I needed to go on antidepressants, is I had sold a script in, like, 1999, and I was on the phone with an agent who was saying that two studios were bidding for it, and I was driving up La Brea crying on the phone with a guy, and tears were running down my face. I'm like, this isn't right.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you were crying because you still felt like shit?
Yeah, I just felt like shit. And part of the shit was like, I can't even fucking enjoy this.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, just like, I wish I could feel this shit.
Right. So your tears were like tears of like, God damn it. How come I can't even feel this?
Like, why even do this shit?
Right.
If you're not. And that's what I would get out of his ego.
Wow.
And like adrenaline from being in a cool situation or doing something cool or whatever. Even killing on stage. Like, for example, when I know certain people get off stage, when, for instance, Chris Rock, to bring him up again, when he gets off stage, he is the nicest. He's so fucking gacked off of the crowd. He's so just like high on adrenaline and like just good feeling. And basically like just good like fucking chemicals that are escaping me, but like serotonin shit like that.
He's dopamine.
Dopamine, serotonin. He's just fucking flying.
Right.
I would never feel like that. I'd feel like, oh, I just fucking murdered, but I would never be like, because I'm, you know, there was no, I wouldn't enjoy it. I wouldn't enjoy it. I wouldn't not enjoy it.
But it was like, flat.
It was flat. It was like, I might as well have not done that, but it didn't. Me and Dove one time talked about getting off stage. Sometimes you just want to take the mic and throw it down. Because it's like, well, fucking that didn't even help. So I've taken antidepressants since I was crying on La Brea in 1999. So I took them, and I took Zoloft at first. Worked great. Really worked well. And I remember telling Chappelle, I think, I go, I now know why people dance. Like, that was how I knew, like, oh, this works. Because I understand the feeling that would make people want to dance. Or just, like, wow. That sort of collective joie de vivre, for lack of a better word. So did that, took Zoloft, probably worked for 9, 10 years, you know, with varying effect, but after a while it just stopped working. Now, when it stopped working, when I would try to go off it, I would get like a tension in my fucking temple that literally couldn't, like a knot in my temple, like if it needed to get massaged, wow. It would just form. And that's how I knew, like, oh, I'm fucking depressed again. Because it would just form.
And what was, when you said it wasn't working, so what was the shift? It started working. In the beginning, it was great.
Yeah.
And then...
There is a term for it, and I always forget it, but it's like it just stopped. It's like efficacy, long-term efficacy just...
Tapers off.
Decreases, yeah.
And that's specific to Zoloft?
No, it's all of them.
All of them.
It can be all of them. Then I switched to probably the last 4 or 5 years I've switched a bunch because all the ones I tried had some side effect.
What is the feeling though that you have on them? Is it like a feeling of you have like more energy?
Do you have a little more
enthusiasm?
Energy for sure. You have like more generosity of spirit, if that makes sense. Like just like you're less of like a hater. Because you don't feel so depleted yourself that you can actually be like, oh, that's good, man. That's fun. That's awesome.
What's hard for people to be happy for other people if they're not happy about themselves.
Yeah, 100%.
It's very hard because
no one's
like,
mean because they're in a good mood.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like other people don't deserve happiness. You can't get it.
Yeah.
Why are they
getting
it?
Why the fuck do you get it?
Yeah.
So that's like any troll. It's like you just see, it's because you're unhappy, man. It's all right. Like, I get it. Just don't take it. My success isn't your failure.
Right.
But that's how it feels because you can't do it. Mm. You can't even get, not only can you not do stand-up or whatever the thing they're mad at you for, they can't even feel what they imagine you feel from doing it.
Right.
So I tried a bunch the last 4 or 5 years. They would work, but there always is some side effect. Nausea.
Mm-hmm.
One, I was like gaining weight and I wasn't eating and I was gaining weight. Really? Yeah, it was so weird. Shit like that. And then the last one was nausea and my dick was in a coma.
Whoa.
Like literally I took the boner drug and
Viagra?
Yeah. Didn't work.
What?
Yeah.
Didn't
That's
work.
How fucking like dead it was. Like literally it's like put the fucking charges, put the fucking
clear
back, nothing.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you had to get off that immediately.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
What's more important, happiness or boners?
Well, what was interesting is it was interesting for the few months that I had it to not have to worry about
boners
or pursuing girls or fucking texting and
right
and Tindering and all that shit. Just like, oh, I don't give a shit.
Wow.
Nothing.
Now when
they seem like nice people.
Now, what does it do? Does it somehow or another deplete your testosterone? Does it?
I don't know why that. The thing about antidepressants is they don't know why they work. They know that they work. They have theories about why they work. Like I was on a class of antidepressants called SSRIs, which are short for selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, which means It's basically a double negative reuptake inhibitor. It's basically when you when the serotonin goes out, usually it gets collected quickly, but if you take this drug, it leaves the serotonin out in your brain longer, I believe. Reuptake inhibitor. Yeah, so it inhibits reuptake. So it, like, hey, stay out. Hey, run around a little bit. You know what I mean? Serotonin. So if you take, that's if you take the drug. I think if I didn't take the drug, it would be, I don't know. I guess my brain would collect it super quick. I'm of the mind that I don't have enough serotonin to begin with. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like I have a serotonin deficiency naturally, but whatever. So my dick was like in a coma and I was throwing up like pretty regularly.
Like how often? Like
3 days a week.
Wow.
I'd just be driving and go like, oh, I'm going to throw up and throw up and then be fine.
So essentially with these drugs, you're trying to somehow or another re-engineer your neurochemical makeup.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, you're trying to help it, basically. Right. I don't think you can re-engineer it. I'll get to the re-engineering.
Right.
But I think with the drugs, you just go like, it's basically a Band-Aid. It's basically just like, hey, reroute, hey, go over there. It's never like your fucking synapses are in different places, you know what I mean?
It's like, but it's amazing that they're doing this and they're not exactly sure, as you say, how they work.
Yeah. Yeah, like, they don't. They really don't.
What the
fuck
is that about?
They have theories. Obviously, they know that SSRIs they selectively, you know, whatever, fucking. But they don't know exactly. They don't even know if it's in your brain or if it's in your stomach. There's a new thing. There was an article in The Atlantic 2 days ago that's saying a lot of. First of all, you're all of like all those chemicals we talked about, like serotonin and all that stuff. It's mostly in your stomach, which people don't know. So they're basically saying like they're looking in people's feces and they think that the amount of chemicals or combinations you have in your stomach can affect mood.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's what the concept behind probiotics affecting your mood are.
100%. By the way, I was getting a bunch of colds and I started taking probiotics and I haven't gotten one.
Dude, I almost never get sick.
Yeah.
I drink kombucha every day.
Yeah.
I have that GT's kombucha, the kind that you have to have an ID to show.
Is that true?
It has more than 0.5% of alcohol.
Okay.
That's all it is. A tiny
amount. Right.
You'd have to drink like 30 of them to catch the buzz you'd get from one beer.
But it's worth it.
Yeah. It's a stupid law. But the probiotic effect of the fermentation of this live culture is it's causing the alcohol.
Yeah.
But it's so good for you, man.
Yeah. It's been like crazy.
Changed my life.
Yeah.
Like traveling used to make me sick. I was always getting sick. I don't get sick anymore.
Yeah.
If I do get sick, it's very quick. It's in and out. It's a quick turnaround.
Yeah, I would highly recommend it.
Yeah, because if you're traveling all the time as a comic on the road, like your immune system takes a fucking beat.
Even in first class, Joe?
It does. Yes, even in first class. I rode coach the other day for the first time in a long time. People were touching me as I was sitting there. I was like, why are you touching me? Your leg is touching my leg. It's actually something comforting about that. Everybody's just touching each other. You're sitting there and you know that your arm's going to touch the guy next to you and everybody just accepts
it's like
it.
Like this is the world we're living in.
Isn't that
for the next couple hours.
I mean, why is that bad?
As long as everyone's arm is touching everyone's elbow, I'm cool.
And as long as no one gets greedy as long as everyone's like friendly with the space, you know, you don't man spread and bop into the other guy's side and, you know. But also hygiene. That's a big one.
It's huge.
Because if you're touching people and they stink, that's fucking brutal. And I've had that happen.
How long was the flight?
Well, it was two flights. What happened was
to Vegas or something?
No, it was to Canada. I fucked up and it's so stupid. It's a stoner move. My flight takes off. It took off at a certain time. And I had it written, the time I was supposed to get up, I had reversed. So instead of thinking that I was supposed to get up at 9 o'clock,
the
flight was at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh no. Like, I thought the flight was at like 11 and I got there at 9.
I gotta think in the future, I think you should just go based on what time the flight leaves.
I always
don't leave it up to the airline what time you should wake up.
Well, it was just such a boneheaded move. I just had too many different things going on and I wrote it down somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, and it just incorrectly wrote it down.
Yeah.
But anyway, point being, I had to switch the flights, blah, blah, blah. And I was thinking, like, it's kind of like the only time where people ever touch people that they don't know, except jujitsu class, maybe. You know? And then you're trying to kill each other.
Yeah, but mass transit.
Yeah, mass transit. Especially, like, you see Tokyo, where they push people in.
Yeah.
I literally have guys whose jobs are to shove people deeper and deeper into those boxes.
Yeah. They make six figures doing that.
And I think people get depressed. Some people get depressed from a lack of human contact.
Absolutely. I'll get to that in a second. So I was just like taking, like the last one, I was like, I'm so sick of fucking taking, because the thing with antidepressant pills is that you don't, it's a complete guessing game what's going to work for you. Because the one I was taking that was making my dick fall asleep and make me throw up was supposed to have the lowest side effect profile of all of them.
Yeah.
But I've had ones that had more, that were supposed to do worse shit, and they didn't. So I was like, I'm so sick of this. So I just started looking up other shit to do. And the big one that kept coming up that I saw was ketamine. So I was like, that's interesting. I knew it was like a party drug, but I didn't really know that much about it.
It's a very weird party drug.
Yeah. Yeah. Having done it, I'm like, why the fuck would you ever take that around people? But so there's a guy in Santa Monica, Dr. Steven Mandel. And that's a picture of me getting the ketamine.
Are you allowed to talk about this guy on the
air? I don't know. I mean, I think I can.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, the guy's name.
He mentioned, I don't mind if you talk about it. So,
an IV dose.
He was an anesthesiologist who basically came up with a regimen for depression. And he's, by the way, he's not the only one. Like, there's probably hundreds in America right now.
That are doing this?
Yeah.
With ketamine?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Especially if you go on Reddit or any of the boards, like, and any kind of like antidepressant boards or whatever, there's people that did it, and there's another one called TMS, which is the other one that's making a comeback, is just the cuckoo's nest one,
the electrical shock therapy,
because they were doing it wrong apparently, and there's a way to do it now. Like, you just the amperage was too high. So they were just fucking frying.
They were cooking your brain too much. Fucking,
if you cook it a little bit, exactly.
You don't want to grill it.
Yeah, precisely. So if you little something, steam it.
Yeah, you could poach an egg, but if you throw an egg on your fucking Weber.
So that's made a comeback. And then there's another one called transcranial magnetic stimulation, where they just basically shoot magnets at your brain.
Mm.
But that's 5 days a week for 5 weeks.
Hmm.
Okay. Ketamine. The treatment is you do six sessions in 2 weeks.
Whoa.
So it's Monday, Wednesday, Friday of 2 weeks. And I did it last week and the week before. So first time I go in, and again, I don't know if I could have researched it. All I knew that when you go in, you have basically, when you do ketamine, you have like a out-of-body sort of experience, meaning like a dissociative experience, so which seems pretty vague. So he hooks the IV up, and within 15 seconds, I was like gone. Like, at first you just get sleepy, and then I was in the trip that you were talking about, thing to fucking geometric shapes, all kind. The thing about tripping that I forgot is how good the transitions are. Is like, it'll go from geometric shapes to like a bear's face to just like just crazy shit for 45 minutes.
Wow.
And then you come out of it, and you slowly come out of it, and you wear like noise canceling headphones. I'm just in a doctor's office, like in a weird, not even weird, like those like 1970s doctor's offices that you see in LA, like just sort of a shitty elevator and whatever. So when I came out of the first one, I was like, it was rough. Because A, I didn't know I was going to trip like that. And B, I didn't get a ton of sleep the night before. And so I'd flown that day. I was just kind of groggy. And I felt really shitty. And it took me, like, I was like, after I was done, I probably laid in the bed there for like an hour. So I was like, I can't do shit right now. Like, I could barely stand. So the first day was rough, and that night I still felt shitty that night. I was like, I don't think I'm going to do it again. Like, that was too rough. And then I woke up Tuesday morning and felt fucking great. I was like, uh-oh, I got to do it again.
Felt great, like...
I felt clear. Here's the one of the ways my depression manifested itself was, like, I felt... My head felt heavy, and I felt like I had, like... I had like a lead weight on my forehead.
You know, that's the way I felt when I did ecstasy. The day after. The day after.
Yeah.
It felt amazing when I did it.
Okay, and that's what it is. Because it depletes.
All the serotonin's gone.
Yeah. And that's basically what people with depression a lot of times are like just every day. It's basically just like a headwind. It's not, it's just like fucking, could this be a little bit easier?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not asking for a miracle. I'm just like, I'm just sick of having to walk into the wind all the time.
Right, right.
A little bit uphill into the wind. It's like, fuck. All right. So I did it again that Wednesday. And every time I did it, the other thing that they, one of the ways that they kind of gauge it is you do like a inventory, a questionnaire, like a 25 question questionnaire. Like, how do you feel about your future? And like, it's like not good, fine, neutral, whatever. Each one has a point value. They add it up. If it's like in the teens or high teens or 20s, that means you're depressed. If you're in the under, you know, the low teens, you're good, whatever. And I think mine went from low 20s to like single digits in the 2 weeks.
Wow.
And the only downside, and I can't get it like perfectly clear read because I'm quitting the SSRI, one of the one that the dick killer, I'm quitting that
at the same time.
So I'm just like, that's, I'm sort of having withdrawal from that. And the way it was manifesting itself for a couple weeks was like, I just felt like shit. I just felt like I had the flu, but not coughing or sneezing, just like run down.
When you wean yourself off of an SSRI, mm-hmm. is there a protocol for doing that?
Taper. That's all you can do.
And when they say taper, like you have like X, do you get smaller pills?
Yeah,
do
you... you just clip them in half. Okay. And that's what I did.
Mm-hmm. And you take less of them?
Yeah, you just do, you go, I was on 20, went to 10, went to 5, now I'm at 0. And
how long have you been at 0?
I don't know. I think 4 weeks.
So how do you feel right now?
I feel better every day. From the SSRI effect has gotten better every day. I feel like, I don't feel nauseous. I'm not nauseous, just like, I don't feel like shit.
Right.
The only way it's kind of manifesting itself now is like, one of my eyes is a little, like, feels like I have something in it.
That's the gay eye.
Got it.
Gay eye for a straight guy. That's what it is.
Yeah, so it's one like of my eyes feels a little gay. So, there's no other word for it. So I just put eye drops in.
That's it.
Yeah. And it
might be unrelated, the eyeball thing.
I think it's related because I've looked it up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There's you know, SSRI withdrawal if you just Google that.
And they have eyeball issues.
Yeah, it's like you'll it'd be a little cloudy.
Huh.
Some people, it usually lasts like 3 weeks. Some people, I've seen guys on Reddit that were like, I fucking had this for 6 months.
Jesus.
Which would make me crazy, I think.
Yeah, how could you not be?
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. So you take it the first time, and how many days afterwards did you feel great? You said two?
One.
One day.
Yeah.
The next day. You feel like shit after it's over?
Felt like shit after it was over. Felt like basically went home and just laid on my couch.
Did you feel like physically worn out? Like what was
I just felt like, I guess like I had a high fever. You know that feeling of just like, I can't do shit.
Was it possible that it was the stress of the experience because you didn't expect
it? Yeah, possibly. Yeah, because you ever had anesthesia?
Mm-hmm.
You know when you come out of it, that's like my least favorite feeling in the world. Mm-hmm. That's basically what it was. That feeling of like, oh fuck, like I could throw up. I'm not gonna.
So it could be a bunch of issues. Did you have the same feeling every time you did it?
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
But I would need to take a nap.
Basically. Every time.
Yeah. Because basically, when I did it on the Wednesday, I took a nap and did a spot that night.
Wow.
Yeah.
I ran into you that night. We talked about it.
It was at the improv, maybe.
Well, I ran into you at the store, and you told me that you did the last treatment that day.
Yeah, but that was Friday. That was like less than a week ago.
Yeah. Okay, it's a different time.
That Friday, because I had done it enough, what I found, what was interesting was every session, it would take me longer to go into the trip. Ooh. Meaning like my body was getting used to it. It was building up like a tolerance for it.
Wow.
For the ketamine.
Like how long is like, it's all IV based, right?
Yeah, it's IV based. The first time, like I said, 20 seconds. And the last time was probably 4 or 5 minutes.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah. And he was upping the dose, I think.
Wow.
So.
Well, I ran into you after the first time you did it, and I ran into you, I think, Friday was after the last time you did it.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we didn't have a chance to talk much until now, so I couldn't, like, get an objective sense of how you seemed.
Yeah. What was interesting was, like, the Friday of the first week, I had, it might have been Friday or Saturday, but there was a thing that was happening to me on stage where I was, like, for, like, months, I felt shitty. You know when you feel shitty, you can't kill that hard?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a basically a cap. Mm-hmm. I had a cap on my sets for months, and it was making me fucking crazy, because I was like, it's not me. Like, it's my, it's A, this fucking, A, it's depression, B, it's the SSRIs, and now it's the SSRIs and the ketamine. But I, on the Friday or the Saturday, I fucking murdered in the main room, which, you know, is, like, hard to do. But it was because I was clear. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was finally like, oh, I don't, the audience wouldn't feel like a sludginess to me. There was like a real, like, you know, more of just like a laser.
Focus.
Yeah.
On point.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I've had nights where I'm tired. That is the worst goddamn feeling, when you're exhausted and you're trying to come up with energy to go on stage. When you're physically, your body's physically exhausted.
Yeah.
So you were kind of battling that a lot. And so, and then you're taking
it. It fucking affects writing too. Being depressed. Like, I've written, I think I've got basically to an hour, but it took me like 2 years. Like, it wasn't like, I'm not like you where I can take a couple months and just come with a newer burr or any of these guys. Like, first of all, I think it would take me longer than 6 months anyway, but it was, and part of it, I wanted to go like, my fucking brain isn't working. Because I just run out of options in terms of SSRIs and shit. So,
and also that's a primary focus of your mind. It's like, how the fuck do I get happy?
Yeah.
You're trying a million different medications, all these different ideas.
Yeah. And like, it's just frustrating. So,
okay. So you do it the first time, and then the next day you feel great.
Yeah.
You're still on the SSRIs. Or you're weaned off.
No, I was done. I mean, you're, I was just off. Done. Now
did
I'm
you
just
have
in
to
withdrawal.
Be weaned off of them? Because like, this is something that's a big issue with ayahuasca. Like, no, I said that like I'm from the jungle.
Yeah.
Ayahuasca.
Oh, you can't, you can't do SSRIs if you take ayahuasca, you'll die, right?
Well, it's very dangerous.
Yeah.
SSRIs are dangerous with ayahuasca, with dimethyltryptamine, with, in mushrooms are very closely related to dimethyltryptamine.
Yeah.
There's people that take mushrooms and they also are taking SSRIs, and I've heard that that's kind of funky too.
I'm trying to think if I've ever done that.
Ari was on SSRIs, I think, and he was taking mushrooms.
I think I've done that.
Maybe he was on a different kind of
medication. Taken SSRIs.
Oh, no, you know what? Mushrooms. I know for a fact, Ari did ask his doctor and told him, and apparently the type of medication he was on was fine with mushrooms.
Yeah. I think I did it once or twice on SSRIs. It's fine.
What's really dangerous, apparently, is if you take a prescription MAO inhibitor, and then you take mushrooms or you take ayahuasca, then it's super fucking dangerous.
I think MAO inhibitors have a big profile, which, like, don't take it with other shit.
Yeah.
That has more, that's on more warnings than most things.
Yeah.
I believe I've read this. I'm like 98% sure I read this. Most people, oh, I did read it. It was this guy, Carl Hart, who'd be a great guest.
Yeah, I've had him.
Oh, all right. There you go.
I love that guy.
He's fucking awesome. Said that most people that die of heroin overdoses are drunk. Like, the most of the overdoses are because they combine it with alcohol.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
He was on O'Reilly the other day, and I texted him. I was like, how the fuck do you do that?
Yeah.
Like, you talk for 5 seconds, and he's interrupting you.
Yeah.
And then they cut away from him for a breaking news report on the lady getting arraigned in upstate New York for helping the prisoners escape.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a panel. There's him and a bunch of other people. They're all talking about drugs, and he barely got a chance to talk.
It's also like, what good does that shit do? That's what I always wonder. Like, when they go, hey, you want to come on a panel on CNN? I'm like, no. I'm not going to change any minds, and
it's
also
a shitty way of communicating.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the way to communicate.
Yes.
This is the best way.
In Woodland Hills.
In an office in park.
Yeah, in a shitty office park.
This is the way to do it.
Red underlighting.
So you go and you do it the first time. The day afterwards, you start
felt
to feel
clear
better.
In the way... I would compare the trip in and of itself, the actual trip, like LSD. LSD, mm-hmm. but LSD without the speed.
But with a lot of visuals, though.
All visuals.
All visuals.
Yeah. Crazy.
So the way McKenna described ketamine, I've never done ketamine, mm-hmm. but the way, you know, McKenna and John Lilly was a huge pioneer of ketamine. You know, John Lilly's the guy who invented the isolation tank.
Oh, and great.
One of his things that he used to like to do was shoot ketamine intramuscularly, like shove it right into his fucking muscle.
I think that's what I did. I mean, I guess
well, you did it IV,
yeah.
But the intramuscular is a slower release and apparently lasts for hours.
Ah.
And he would bang, whack himself and climb into the tank and be gone for a fucking day. Just zoom around.
That's crazy.
And McKenna described it like this is a very interesting way of describing psychedelics. He believed, whether or not I was correct, but he believed that every psychedelic you take, you're experiencing not just your trip, but the trip of all the people who have ever tripped on that psychedelic. So when you're taking mushrooms, you're not just experiencing the mushroom. You're experiencing the mushroom as it has interfaced with countless human beings all throughout humanity. All the different people who have taken the mushrooms and had these beautiful experiences, you experience those experiences as well. But
I don't disagree. I don't agree with that because I can't. But it seems like, yeah, that's possible.
But what he said about ketamine was he felt like ketamine was a new drug. And he felt like when he took ketamine that he was in a giant office building that was empty. It's like a vacant office building. He's like he would walk around and there was no one there. He would like look around. There was cubicles. There was lights. There was these big open spaces, but there was no one in the room.
Yeah,
he said it was just devoid of the kind of experience that you have when you take other sorts of psychedelics. Did you experience?
I was in the things that I remember. One of the things I remember was like getting. I would start on me and then just pull out wide, like for lack of a better example, like Google Maps, or in my head it was more like Grand Theft Auto, and like where I am. There's the I'm in Santa Monica and I just go, there's California, there's whatever. Like, I was aware of every sort of your whole experience, people that I went to high school with, people that I know now, like just everyone was sort of there, if not like actually, but sort of, you know, I think about them. And then it was like, I was in the Matrix is too simplistic, but did you see the new, Land of the Lost, perhaps, with Will Ferrell?
No.
There's just a weird black void scene.
Mm.
Like, it's like basically a black void with like a Tron floor.
Oh.
This was like a, there was no Tron floor. Like, it was a white sort of, it was more of a disco floor, okay. Actually, of white. This was, I didn't have the disco floor, but I did have the sort of black void, and then shit would form out of that, and it was sort of lit. The fill lighting, as they call it, would be green.
Mm-hmm.
So like the way your wall's red, it would be green. So yeah, and it was there you go. He just made it green. Oh man, I'm back there,
dude. I believe, God. Man.
Okay. So the trip was pleasant. It was never like I never freaked out. I never.
Did you experience entities? Is there anything that you were communicating with you there? It was all just shapes.
Yeah, it was all shapes.
So it was just you?
Shapes and feelings, like shapes and like I would think of stuff.
And when you say you would think of stuff, was the stuff that you would think of related to depression? Was it related to
what I'm trying to do?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, so like what kind of stuff was going through your head while you were having this experience?
Just like about like love and fucking, like the time I went.
Should have the Hulk music on cue for any time someone starts talking about.
The time I did the Float Labs thing
right.
Made me get a dog because I went to Float Labs and I floated and I was in the middle. I was like, you got to love something, man.
Mm.
And I got a dog. And that dog has been the bane of my existence. I'm good. That dog has bit more people.
The dog is a
fuck
killer.
You for sending me there.
Kills old ladies.
So yeah, I thought of a lot. I just think about it, but it wasn't that much.
It wasn't that
it was
much
more
love?
Yeah, I thought about like what if there's an earthquake also. Like fucking if you're tripping on like ketamine, you're gone. My eyes are closed. I couldn't open them. Like I wouldn't have physically been able to open them. I was like, what if there's a fucking earthquake? But then I'd just be like, there's not gonna be a fucking earthquake.
Wow, what a weird thing to focus on. So you're trying to sabotage.
It would just
almost.
Come into my like.
Don't you get that when you're on weed though? Sometimes
I don't do weed.
Oh, that's right. Weed will let you consider all the possible fuck ups that could go wrong.
Even the earthquake, I was like, I get demolished.
So you die.
Everybody's gonna die. It felt like more of like a. It was like it was gonna be like the San Andreas. And The Rock would not save
it. Well, what they think about that when it comes to psychedelic experiences is like it's your the thing about psychedelic experiences that's universal is the ego dissolving properties of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they think that a lot of this, what that feeling is when you're trying to, you know, to try to think about all the things that could go wrong, it's almost your ego not wanting to let go. It's like, hey, you need me, man. Because what if the fucking earthquake happens? Or what if you know, what if something's happening right now? What if someone's breaking into your car? What if, and the paranoia and the fear, the survival instinct is a part of the ego.
It felt like I was backstage in my brain. If that makes sense.
Huh.
Like, I was seeing the machinations. I was feel it, but I'd also like see how it got there.
So you could see the wiring.
Yeah, but that's what I always feel like when I do. When I did LSD and when I did the ketamine, I was like, oh, it feels like my brain. I feel like I'm like getting a tour of my brain.
So what's supposed to be the mechanism for repair or for fixing?
This is another thing that they don't really know. They don't know.
Wow.
But I can tell you that it worked. Like, because I felt better every day. It has to do with the SSRIs for sure, but I also feel like the thing that's been I've been noticing is, and this is such a weird symptom of improvement, I've been laughing at my own jokes more. Which sounds like, well, it's fucking, you know, so you're an egomaniac. No, I'm just enjoying the idea as like an independent thing.
Right.
Like I'm having fun. Like, me and this person are playing, for lack of a better word. Like, we're just fucking around. Like, so that, to me, is a symptom of feeling better. And I also physically feel better.
Wow. Okay. So the first one makes you feel better. Is there an increase every time you do it, 2 through 6?
He didn't tell me. I'm betting there was.
You mean an increase in dosage?
Yeah.
I meant an increase in how you feel?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Because I'd feel it would take me longer to get in the trip. And then the hangover would be way less. Like, I think last Friday, I didn't take a nap.
Wow.
In fact, I know I didn't take a nap because I got it at 4, and I had, like, an 8:15. So I was tripping from 4:15 to 5, and then figured out how to go, and had a good set.
Wow.
Yeah.
So is this something that you're going to have to repeat, or is it supposed to be like you whack it out in 6 tries?
At this point, the how long it lasts is you know, varies. He said it could be a few weeks, could be a few months. He did tell me, he said, these are the things that will make it last longer. Diet, exercise, obvious, sleep. He said to sleep with the sun. He's like, wake up early if you can, like... And another doctor told me that, like, more serotonin is produced early in the day than late.
So if you wake up early to wake, early to rise.
Yeah. That's basically, like, that's better for your mental health.
Keeps a man healthy, wealthy, and wise.
So,
early to bed.
So, yeah, it's like going to bed, trying to wake up at 7 or 8.
But how are you going to go to bed early? You're a comic.
I haven't yet.
That's not going to work, right? You're just going to be tired all the time.
No, but I can go to bed. There are days during the week I can go to bed at midnight or 1.
I do feel like there's ideas that are available to you when you wake up early in the morning that aren't available to you at any other time of the day. Like, sometimes I force myself to get up early in the morning just to sit down and write, because I think that sometimes I force myself awake. Like, if I'll set my alarm for 6 and then I'll get up and I'll sit in front of that computer at 6:30, I'm all cloudy-eyed. But then somewhere on like 6:20 or 6:45, 6:50, 20 minutes later, I start getting ideas.
Yeah.
And then they start coming out, and then there's like this is like initial wake up, and then the coffee hits in, and there's initial wake up ideas that I think are almost different because they're really connected to the sleep world. You were just sleeping just a small amount of time ago.
Yeah. And you can't, you don't have defenses at that point.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be like, stupid. You're just like, ugh.
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons why people like writing really silly shit late at night. Like the news radio writers, they didn't even start working until like 2 o'clock in the morning.
I think that was mostly Paul.
Yeah. It was Paul.
It was Paul being in his 20s. And
it was also a method to his madness.
Yeah.
Like Paul knew what he was doing. And they would write the silliest shit.
Yeah.
Because they were barely awake. They were just like laughing and giggling.
Yeah, I'd always heard that show, they just play video games. That's mostly what the writers do.
They got me addicted. They had a local area network set up with computers playing Quake on them.
Oh,
and you would
funny.
Go there and we'd all play real time against each other and talk shit and laugh.
That's awesome.
Oh my God, it was so addictive.
But I like being up. That's the thing. I don't like getting up, but I like being up.
Right. Getting up is the hard part. Forcing yourself to get up out of the bed.
Oh, you know what? I have a thing on my phone that's really funny and like it's either for you or not. It's an app called I Can't Wake Up. Right? Okay. It's an alarm clock. It goes off. It like plays music or whatever, chime or vibrates, whatever. In order to turn it off, you have to basically enter a code. So it's like a 25 or 30 character code, caps, numbers, lowercase. Takes fucking 55 seconds to do. And by the time you're done, you're like, fuck it, I'm up.
Oh my God. If you're doing that next to a girl, if you're dating a girl, and she doesn't have to get up, she'd be so mad at you.
Okay. Oh,
fucking asshole. You just get out of the bedroom.
It's really funny and it works, actually.
I have no problem getting up. I don't like it, but I do it.
Yeah.
But I grew up getting up every day because I had a paper route from the I was like 17 till I was like 21.
Yeah.
Maybe even 22. I kept it till. So I'm used to just like, just get up. You know, just get up.
Yeah. The other, so diet, exercise, get up with the sun. And other thing that was interesting was talk therapy. Fine. The other thing with therapy, I got so sick of talking.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I need a physical cure. Like, I know what the problems are. It's not making me feel better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a fucking physical issue. I promise you.
And that's pretty much been established, right? I mean, it's pretty much been established that there are a large majority of people or a large number of people that have depression. There is there's a depleted amount of serotonin.
Yeah. Well, yes.
Is that established?
Yes. As far as I'm concerned, it's established. But they don't really know. And there are certain therapies, CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, that works really well for people.
Now, what do you do when you do that?
I don't know because I haven't done it.
Now, when you're getting, do you get measured? Like, do they measure your serotonin? They take your blood?
I don't think they don't have a measurement for it.
Whoa.
Yeah. Look it up, but I've Googled it, and because I've been like, how the fuck do I prove this?
But they do have serotonin syndrome, right? Where you're taking 5-HTP and an SSRI, and it gives you too much serotonin. It can really fuck with you.
Yeah.
So how do they know it's giving you too much serotonin?
I think by the symptoms.
It seems weird that they don't have a way of measuring what your levels are. Because can they measure your levels of dopamine?
I don't think so.
Whoa. The brain is so fucking complicated.
Oh, they know,
man.
Like nothing. They know nothing about it because it's impossible to, there's no, you know what I mean? It's like you can look at a heart. Most of it, that's physical.
Mm-hmm.
That's just like blood, the thing, the liquid goes in, then it comes out. It's mechanical, whereas the brain is not mechanical.
Well, one of the things that you brought up was Carl Hart, Dr. Carl Hart, and there's a lot of really brilliant people today that are trying to get people to understand addictions and what are the root cause of addiction. And Gabor Mate had some interesting stuff to say about that, too, in the movie The Culture High. And one of the main issues they're talking about is that a lot of these people that are addicted, that deal with addictions, or people that are depressed and people that have like these moments in their life they're trying to get over the hump, they're dealing with childhood abuse, or they're dealing with childhood stress, or really traumatic
events. I've had a lot of
events.
Therapists tell me I have PTSD.
Yeah.
A lot of therapists told me that.
Well, you didn't have the easiest childhood.
No. I think it's partially like, my dad never hit me, but he used to beat the shit out of my brothers, and I was like 3. So I think that must have been like...
Yeah.
Traumatic.
How could it not be?
Yeah.
How could it not be?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I can't imagine that. I can't even imagine that.
Yeah, it was shitty. It's just a shitty way to... And then, like, there's so many kids, you don't get, like, the enough nutrients, basically.
Yeah.
So, and they say, like, a lot of that, a lot of serotonin levels are based on that early shit.
It only makes sense.
Yeah.
It only makes sense that your brain is programmed based on the experiences that it has to deal with.
Yeah.
And that if you're dealing with, like, that's one of the things they say about extremely violent neighborhoods, kids that grow up in violent, like, Michael Irvin was telling me this, that kids that grow up in violent families and around violence, they literally, from the womb, the mother, as she's dealing with high cortisol levels,
yeah,
and stress levels and adrenaline,
yes,
the mother is programming the child,
yeah,
from the time it's inside of her body to be more reactive, to explode, to, like,
I feel
freak
like,
out.
Yeah, cortisol at an early age, I feel like, killed serotonin. You know what I mean? I could be making that up, but it sounds right.
So, would you categorize what you're doing by having these experiences with ketamine like a rewiring? Do you,
yes,
think you're so that's what you're saying?
You're
going to
think I'm crazy, but there have been times in the last week where I can feel my brain physically not moving, but like
adjusting,
just like.
Like maybe like,
just like
a certain
a little,
amount of energy was inside that area.
Yeah, I don't. Well, that's the thing about the brain; it fucking knows what it is. Like, they know about like dendrites and fucking and nerve endings, all that shit, but they don't know about. They don't really know. They just know chemicals and the synapses. That's, but they don't know exactly how they interact even. So, I felt my brain has felt different physically, and my sleep has been all over the place. One night I couldn't. I woke up at 6 and couldn't get back to sleep. Like, and then another day I slept till like 11 in the morning, you know what I mean? 11 or 12, like late. So it's been all over the place, which lets you know, like there's an adjustment going on.
Do you get sun in your bedroom?
Yeah.
You don't sleep with curtains closed?
No. Nope.
So when the sun comes in, you wake up?
No.
That's how you're supposed to do it, right? Isn't that what you're supposed to do?
Yes. Idea behind that's, it? That goes to that waking up with the sunshine.
Yeah.
So... And the other thing, the other symptom that I feel like it's better is I've been writing more. It's like, fucking thank God.
Yeah.
Fucking thank you.
For not just writing more, but being more productive with your writing.
Yeah.
Right.
Being more productive with it. Because
you
also
don't strike me as a guy who would be lazy, like not write.
No. But like, you know, I'm not like, if I don't have an idea, I just don't write.
Right.
I'm not one of these people like, no. Hey, there's something funny about the sky. Like, let's figure it out. Like, that's kind of never how it's been for me.
I write entries. I write like blog entries or essays, and then I extract funny ideas from
that's
them.
That's what I've been doing.
I feel like if I sit down and just try to write jokes, it's not my style. It's not the most effective way. Like, I create a lot of like pulp. There's a lot of nonsense that I don't need.
Fucking tell me about it.
Like, but I accepted that as a part of the process, that
yeah,
I'm just like mining.
Yeah.
Like you don't just tap into a mountain and go, oh, look, it's all gold.
Yeah.
Like, no, it's gold mixed in with rock and bullshit, and you gotta find it.
And again, I think some people are just better at distilling their shit,
mm-hmm,
or their shit comes to them more distilled.
But don't you think, though, that for me at least, almost all of it sucks until I bring it to the stage. Like, almost, I have to find out what it really is. I have to, like, push it out in front of people. Like, I had this new bit that I worked out last night for the first time ever at the Ice House. And as I was working it out, I was like, oh, finally, I know. Because I didn't know. Like, before, I was like, is there something in this? Like,
yeah.
I don't know if there's anything in this.
That's the thing about comedy, you're never sure.
Yeah.
You're never fucking sure. So, I literally go on with this and go, I don't know. If you asked me to bet, I'd lose money a lot of the
right
time.
Right. And then sometimes it's like a tagline that's the funniest
that
line.
That gets the huge laugh, and you're like, oh, all right.
Or a throwaway.
I still said it.
Yeah.
I'm still taking the credit.
I'll take the credit.
I didn't think it was where I thought.
Do you think that attitude, that thinking about the credit, like what we were talking about before, that,
mm-hmm,
that was the boost that you got, was you would get ego and you would get adrenaline, mm-hmm, and you wouldn't get the joy.
Yeah.
Do you think that it's detrimental to concentrate on the credit? Do you think that it's better to achieve like a zen state?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing of like the thing I've said on here before, which when me and Dave did the show, we wouldn't tell people who wrote what.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was like, it's none of your business. Because
right,
you're just going to use it to judge the person who didn't write it, who,
mm-hmm,
didn't come up with it. So yeah, I don't... Whenever I'm with a group of people, if I'm writing in a room, my feeling is generally how it works with me is I don't pitch anything for a while up front. And I'm like, dude, you gotta fucking pitch him. Fucking pitch him. And then by the end, I've either caught up or beat most of the people. Like, because I just want to contribute. You know what I mean? Like, just I just want to contribute to the room. Right. So, but the idea, I don't get too, I want to hold my own, but I'm not like, I'm going to fucking vanquish these motherfuckers. Because it's it's comedy. It's like, it's silly, and like how you come up with it is so communal that it's.
Well, in that sense, but I'm talking about in the sense of actually writing things for you on stage, not in the writer's room when you're writing for a sitcom or something like that. We're talking about like you coming up with a tagline out of nowhere and go, well, I'll take it. I still want credit for that.
I'm joking about it in that I guess it's like the ego. It's just like, I didn't know that was the thing. It's like the guy who invents, it happens a lot with pharmaceuticals, actually. They think it's for high blood pressure and then it ends up being for... For depression,
hair loss or
exactly,
shit.
So it's like, oh, cool, but I don't. The credit thing, I don't get too hung up with. I'm like glad that I came up with it, but I'm like you, where there's such, you know, chaff, like just fucking nothing.
Yeah,
and then it's what's nice is when you have a thought or like a long held idea about something, and then 8 years later, you come with a joke for it?
Yeah. And for me, also, sometimes I find puzzle pieces, and they're like little islands, and all of a sudden, click together, and they have a bridge, and then they become awesome.
Like, I know where I'm going to put you.
Oh, my God, you puzzle fucker.
Little buddy, come on over.
Now you're exciting. Now you're a part of a little continent.
Yeah.
It's not an island anymore.
Yeah, because after a while, if you have enough bits in your act, if you have like 5 or 6 ideas, or 8 or whatever, then you can just... You'll just end up filling up those 8 more than, like, I got to come up with 2 more.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, like, the 8 get longer with those little puzzle pieces.
Now, after doing these 6 treatments, do you anticipate this being, like, a quarterly thing that you do to just keep your brain charged in this state?
He told me that there's a guy who does it once a month, whether he feels like he needs it or not. By the way, I should say it's $600 a treatment.
Jesus.
Yeah.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
So you are...
But by the way, they were like, it's $3,500. I was like, I'll give you... Name your fucking price. If it's going to work,
right.
I'll give you half my life savings. I don't give a fuck.
Right.
Like, it's none of this shit means anything if I'm not happy.
Not only that, as an artist, as someone who's more productive if you're happy, it's worth a shitload of money.
Yeah. That's 100% true. And also more productive when your brain's working properly.
How long has this gentleman been doing this?
Didn't ask.
But he has one guy.
He was an anesthesiologist. By trade, he was an anesthesiologist. And in the, by the way, it's approved by the FDA.
Right.
That's what's so crazy. The first thing I said when I came out of the trip, I go, I can't believe the FDA approved that.
How did they know? Like,
cause it works. It's like, he said it's like 70-80% of people it works with,
depression.
With persistent depression. Like, persistent, kind of mildly untreatable depression.
What if people aren't depressed? What about a guy like me?
I don't know. I don't know. It could take you to...
Monkeying with your fucking neurology there, Rogan.
I mean, it might. I don't think it'll...
It fucks me up.
I don't think it'll fuck you up any more than DMT or
flip me over
ayahuasca or anything. I was going to do ayahuasca.
Yeah.
And then the more I read about it, I was like, eh.
Yeah?
Just like...
What's my...
Really throwing up for hours and fighting diarrhea. Yeah. And then it also seemed like nebulous in terms of, is that what happens or not?
I've only done DMT. I've done the pure extract, which is what ayahuasca is a slow release version of DMT.
Okay.
So what happens is with DMT, they get it down to this freebase form, which is essentially they process it down to the raw crystals, and you smoke that, and you get pure DMT. Or the way Rick Strassman did it. Rick Strassman, finally we rescheduled. His health is doing much better, and he'll be here, I think, August. I think he's going to be here in August. But he wrote a great book called DMT, The Spirit Molecule. It's based on...
Yeah, they
on
made
his,
a documentary, right?
Yeah, and I hosted the documentary.
Oh, great. It's in my queue, Joe.
Yeah, we'll go watch it.
See you soon.
See me. I'm beautiful. It was connected to Rick's work, but it was a lot of other experts and Dennis McKenna and a lot of different people interviewed talking about the drug. But what he found, he had, this is all FDA approved as well, and they did these trials out of the University of New Mexico where they gave people intravenous DMT, which is just like they're doing the intravenous ketamine with you, you know, boom, right into this bloodstream and a long-term effect, just like your experience.
Yeah.
It's like a 45-minute trip as opposed to DMT, which is like 50, you smoke it rather, which is like 15 minutes. So the ayahuasca, what they've done is they figured out a way to have DMT and MAO inhibitor, a natural MAO inhibitor.
Okay.
Because monoamine oxidase, which is MAO, dissolves DMT in the gut. So if you try to take it orally, your body just breaks it down. And one of the reasons for that is that DMT exists in so many different plants that it was just orally active on its own. You would get high every time you get eat a salad. Would be edible, You'd be tripping your balls off. You know, it would be edible, but it's just, you would be freaking out. Your neurotransmitter levels would go through the fucking roof every time you ate vegetables. So they figured out how to do it with, you know, they did it in a hospital setting, just like sort of what you're doing, a doctor's office setting, sort of like what you're doing. And they had, you know, really, really, really profound results with it, to the point where it was really, really life-changing shit for the people that were a part of it.
Yeah, because it's just like a fucking, it's like having a, it's like, you know when you see boxers working with like a weighted vest?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, take the vest off.
So that's what you feel like after you got out of there, you took the vest off.
Yeah.
And you took the vest off more and more every time you did it.
Yeah.
And so the sixth one, after the sixth one's over, describe what it's like the next day after the initial smaller hangover now, because you're
smaller
six times
hangover over. And just general. I was taking that, like I said, the scores would go down it's called the Beck questionnaire or some shit. And I just feel like I like my dog more. I mean, it's just the dumbest shit, but it's like, I write more, I laugh my own jokes more, I like my dog more. The other thing that he said, which I was going to mention, of the things that will make it last longer, diet, health, exercise, talk therapy, and a close personal connection. That's what he said.
Close personal connection.
Yeah. With someone.
With someone.
Yeah.
With a love.
Yeah. So,
are you capable of love?
I'm on the street. I'm out on the streets looking.
Looking for love in all the wrong places?
I'm looking for a candidate. Trying to make this ketamine last, girl.
Now, what are you doing for exercise?
Kettlebells and treadmill.
Okay.
Which I always do. But it's, you know, like one of those, just a YouTube kettlebell exercise regimen.
Yeah, that's hard to motivate yourself. You should go take a class.
The thing is, I don't have a hard time. Like, when I got my treadmill, my accountant's like, trust me, you're never going to use it. My clients get it, never use it. I was like, I'm
what a
Irish
accountant.
Catholic. Like, I'm fucking going to use it. Trust me. Like, I will be like, no, you fucking, you motherfucker, you will.
Why you ever see the talking shit like that? Questioning your will. Say, listen,
he's
bitch.
Because he's
sign
an
checks,
asshole like that.
Fuck.
He did that when, I invested in that Laugh Stub website that does the tickets for all the comedy clubs. I invested in it 4, 5, 6 years ago. And he's like, I don't think I quadrupled my money. And it was like, by the way, my dad's a fucking lawyer. Like, I'm not a rube. My dad was a tax lawyer. Like, I'm not like, wait. And I invested in a restaurant recently. He's like, yeah, you can sit at the corner table. I'm like, I'm not doing it to sit at the fucking corner table. I'm doing it because I think it's a good investment.
You need a new accountant. He sounds like a negative Nancy.
He is.
What a dick.
Yeah. So,
if I had an accountant like that, I'd be like, listen, fuck face.
He's trying to be cautious is what he's trying to do.
Fuck him.
Yeah.
Fuck him. Cautious people are great, but not that cautious. Where you're getting cautious about a fucking treadmill, you micromanager.
Yeah.
Just let him buy the treadmill.
Yeah. Let the kid have some fun.
Let the kid have a fucking exercise equipment in
his
house.
I use it all the time. Kettlebell's the same thing.
So do you feel like a noticeable change when you have a good workout? Do you feel like elevated? Do you feel
no,
happy?
I have yet to get that. At this point, because I felt shitty and didn't exercise for like 3 weeks, I'm like fucking doing kettlebells and I'm like, fuck, afterward, just because I'm out of shape basically.
Right.
So I'm in that like fucking Jesus.
So the 3 weeks where you were weaning yourself off of the drugs?
The last couple months I just haven't had time to do that shit. And I haven't been home and shit, so.
Right.
So, but now that I'm back on it, I'm hoping, I've never had a runner's high. You know what I mean? We're like, yeah, you got a runner's high. I'm like, I fucking never had a runner's high. What the fuck are you talking about?
Wow.
That would require serotonin.
I think you got to go deep to get a runner's high, too. You got to be exhausted.
Yeah. I can't remember what the mechanism is, why you get it. It's like one of those things where your body thinks you're dying or something.
My buddy Cameron Haynes just ran a fucking 24-hour run, a mile track, 24 hours. He did 106 laps. He ran 106 miles in 24 hours. His legs swelled up to twice their size. His feet are fucking bleeding. He's had videos on his Instagram of them popping these blood volcanoes in his feet, popping it and squirts up in the air.
What did he do it for?
To be an asshole. To let everybody know that he can run 106 miles.
I like
miles.
That his body hulked out afterward. Like, I guess we're a Hulk now. Fuck it. Let's Hulk out.
He pushes himself. He's really into pushing himself, you know, like testing his mental toughness, testing his mental boundaries.
Yeah.
So he ran 106 miles. Fucking psycho. He's crazy. He's a professional bow hunter. He's a crazy guy as it is.
Yeah, say no more.
He regularly throws a 135-pound rock in his backpack and climbs up hills to simulate like what it's like to pack out meat when you're hunting. Because you got to – these mountain hunters – mountain hunting is incredibly difficult to do physically.
You do it? Is that the one you did?
I've done it a couple times. Yeah. But the climbing up was the most shocking. Like how tired you get.
I thought,
like I'm in shape. I work out all the time.
Yep.
Like, I'll climb that mountain, bitch. But you get to the top, you're like, holy fuck.
Yeah.
If you're not doing that specifically, like constantly climbing, you get fucking exhausted. So he gets in, and then you miss out on opportunities. And he's a professional. That's what he does. So he does it. He gets in shape literally for that. And then along the way, he got addicted to getting in shape. You know, and then you get addicted to results and addicted to performance.
Cocaine. Other thing I was going to mention was since taking the ketamine, my recall has gotten better.
Memory.
Yeah. Because that's the thing that is sort of unsung about depression. It fucks your memory up. Like, you can't recall words.
Well, it makes sense, because memory's increased by upping your neurotransmitters.
Yeah.
When you take nootropics, that's one of the things that we found when we did the double-blind placebo studies at the Boston Center for Memory with Alpha Brain, was that one of the big markers that it increased in is memory. Memory and even reaction time, executive function, all those things
that
you're attaching to... Like, or the opposite of it, you're attaching to depression. This, like, slowness, this drag, this weight.
Yeah. The other thing, last two nights when I've been at clubs, I remember everyone's name.
Oh.
Normally, I'm like, I think I know your name. I couldn't tell you what it is.
Hmm.
Like, I could see their name next to their face.
Wow.
Which, again, just the weird thing that you don't think about. And then when it happens, you're like, fucking, okay, good. I thought my memory was fucked up.
If I could remember how I used to think of you when I first met you, like way back at the Boston Comedy Club, you were never like jovial.
Mm-mm.
You never like were like real happy.
Ever.
You were always cool.
Like, yeah.
We always were friendly with each other.
Yeah, fucking throw the ball around a little.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
You were always
I know. When I was a kid, I was like that. There was a picture of me as a baby, one or one and a half. And I'm like literally staring at the picture, like staring at the camera. And Chappelle goes, and you've had that look on your face ever since.
Yeah, you were always kind of stoic.
Yeah,
you know?
And it's not. And the thing is, it's like the other thing. It sucks going through life going like, I know there's something better.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's something. I don't want to be like this. Like,
right.
I know that there is a, I know if I wasn't like this, life would be more enjoyable. And I know it's not, you know, it's the thing with depression is a lot of times people think it's just like, oh, well, you don't fucking, it's like when Henry Rollins said, fucking, I can't believe Robin Williams killed himself. It's like, well, then you don't fucking understand depression, dickhead. It's not like getting lung cancer because you didn't even breathe right.
He's got that whole suck it up attitude down pat.
Yeah.
But I can't subscribe to that. I've known way too many people that have had like real fucking problems with it. And I think it can be adjusted with the behavior modifications, the way you treat people, the way you interface with people, with exercise, with diet.
A little bit.
There's a lot going on. But some people, man, it's not enough.
Yeah.
Some people just are still fucking depressed.
Yeah. I've gone to therapy fucking 15 years.
Ari said mushrooms helped him a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot of people say, like, mushrooms, they're trying to, they're, mushrooms is in this whole ketamine,
Ibogaine,
yeah, but the Iboga, extracts of Iboga, yeah. Ayahuasca, all that shit. There's a thing in South America that you can go, or Costa Rica, that, it's like an Iboga, an Ibogaine retreat. And you see, there are videos on this retreat thing, you see a guy transform in a week, and it's not fake.
Right.
You can see it in his carriage, in his eyes, like, it's amazing. So, yeah, I think some people, it's just like, you gotta fucking hard, do a hard restart.
Yeah, hard restarts are great for phones and people.
Yeah, which brings me to the Samsung Galaxy S6, Joe. You know, when you do the math, it's simple. Six is greater than six.
What? Is that one of the ads?
That is.
Maybe you should do punch up on that.
I do a little punch up, but they don't. I can't pick what they pick.
They should listen to you.
I think they're popular, though. They do listen to me sometimes.
They're very popular.
But like, I think the ads are popular, so I can't argue with them.
Well, it's just
all
funny.
Those ads on YouTube. It's just on the in the comments. It's just every. It's just Apple, Samsung, Apple. Fuck you! Fuck you! Fuck you! Fuck you! Fuck you! It's like, dude, you gotta. This can't be that important.
Well, people get hung up on brands so hard. You know, I've had people that I've talked to that say, "I'll never buy a Ford. I'm a fucking Chevy guy." And you're like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah.
Like, what's wrong with you? I don't buy Apple, dude. I'm a Windows guy.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay.
Okay.
Jesus Christ. What if all of a sudden Apple comes up with the greatest thing ever? Are you going to stick to your guns?
Because they trick you into... Because it's not about the product. It hasn't been about the product in advertising for 20, 30 years. It's about the cultural meaning of the thing. With especially big brands.
Especially, that's why, like, sneaker companies and shit like that, once they go south... Once they're for losers, good
Forget
luck.
Forget it.
Good luck.
Once you see one homeless guy wearing them, and I'm talking to you and one. Once you see,
and one had its day in the sun.
Yeah,
but it didn't
for like
work.
2 years. Yeah, but and what then happened? It was just homeless guy. I don't know. It's interesting. I'm sure it's interesting.
They fucked up their brand.
Yeah.
What other brands would you say are inexorable or unfixable?
Pony in the 80s.
Pony's back, though.
They tried.
What about Puma?
Puma
was a little shaky for a while.
Well, there are some that
now
like...
Now it's kind of classic.
Some are European companies. Mm-hmm. Like, I think Nike owns Converse, and I think Adidas owns Puma.
Converse All-Stars never stopped.
Yeah.
They never went away.
They never did.
They hung in there just by the fact that it's not expensive and... Badass fucking sneaker.
They're like stylish enough and neutral enough.
Yeah.
They don't call a lot of attention. They don't go on and on about it. You know what I mean?
Chucks all day. So then there's like a bunch of other companies that are like, New Balance. Not sure.
Yeah. Well, New Balance. Some of them are just for runners. Like right. Some are just like Saucony.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
New Balance.
What about Adidas?
Brooks. Apparently,
Adidas is always going to have a certain like shell tops are always going to have a certain amount of class.
Yeah.
My Adidas.
And Nike's got the
pro athlete angle.
Yeah, but they've got like the one that's been like cool that black dudes wear.
Yeah.
The clean ones. My white.
The clean ones.
I can't think of the name of it.
Do you request in your rider a new pair of sneakers with every show that you do?
I do not. Like Eddie Griffin?
Yes.
Those are the ones. It's that shoe.
Yeah. White sneakers.
It's the white Air Force ones. Thank you very much. It's the white Air Force ones. They've like that's a perennial for them.
A perennial.
Yeah.
Mm.
And the other one is the fucking Air. It was the first one with the bubble.
Remember when it used to be Timberlands?
Air Max.
That is correct.
Remember when it used to be Timberlands?
Yeah.
Timberlands with no laces.
Yeah. Yeah. Remember? I was there, Joe.
What happened there?
It wasn't jovial.
That didn't work.
No, in certain areas, they never went out.
They never went out.
In certain areas, they never went out.
Is it like Doc Martens with depressed white people?
That is correct.
Doc Martens, there's a big part of the depressed punk rocker,
angry.
Rebellion.
Yeah.
They want to be from Liverpool.
Not talking to your parents, that
Fuck
type
my way. Parents, I'm doing heroin.
Mm-hmm.
Look at my shoes.
I'll be on St. Mark's if anyone needs me.
Doc Martens are a weird one. Like, if you wore Doc Martens, you basically like... giving up on the rest of society. Like,
and they're not good looking. They started, like, skinheads made them popular. Like, really? They were, like, big in the skinhead community, and then they kind of took off from there. It's like, are we sure?
Well, they represented, like, a certain aesthetic, like, a person who's just not following the norm. You like dark things, clouds.
Yes. Safety pins in your clothes. It's like the Johnny Rotten fucking Malcolm McLaren shit.
Yeah. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps, says Kevin. All these fucking weirdos, man.
Yeah. So, I've got to say, so far, so good with the ketamine. Like, it's
Great to hear that you found something that's an actual solution.
Yeah.
That at least in this one run, have people had an issue similar to the way you were saying that these SSRIs, they would work for a little while, but then they stopped working. Have people had an issue like this with ketamine, or is it too early to tell?
I think they've... my feeling personally is, like, at a certain point I'll do something else, but I don't think it's a matter of quitting. I don't know what would I don't think it would be like the SSRI thing is your a chemicals leaving your body.
Right.
That's the withdrawal, which creates like any drug withdrawal. It's just your body's trying to compensate. With this, there's no ketamine in me now to speak of.
Right.
I guess maybe ketamine creates something in your brain that whatever. So,
well, that's one of the weirdest things about some psychedelic trips is you feel like there's rewiring going on.
Mm-hmm.
You feel that with DMT, like they're working in your brain. Like you see them peripherally and you're looking at you going, shh.
Yeah.
And they're like doing some shit off to the side.
That's what I mean. It's like going backstage in your brain. You're just like, oh, fuck. This is the, I'll go, hey, guys. How are you?
Well,
you
know? I think you're seeing, correct me if I'm wrong, but what you're seeing is like the roots of where your behavior is coming from when you're saying that you see the wiring under the board?
I just see more like the board.
The board itself.
Yeah. Not necessarily like, oh,
do you
there's
see your
the,
childhood?
The lever.
Do you see your childhood?
No, I didn't see my childhood
influences?
Very much. No.
I mean, just see you in the current state.
I don't really see, it was a POV. We all know POV from porn. It was a POV shot. Of me basically laying in the same position as I was on the bed, which is just like, you know, sitting up in the bed. So it was just me basically. At one point, it became like a little roller coaster, like, but a fun kind of smooth, like, water ride. But it's just me kind of going through different things. And some of the times it was just like white blob, you know, just like...
And you're going into it with a mindset where you're trying to cure your depression, or you're trying to eliminate it or mitigate it or
I didn't. Yeah, I was like, I'm just hopeful.
Right.
But
while you're having these experiences, while you're on the water slide, is this a theme? Are you thinking? Are you just experiencing it?
It's just kind of a nice feeling. And then at times I would be like, oh, fuck, I'm in Santa Monica. I'm trying to treat depression.
Wow. And you would think that while you're in the middle of the trip?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And the other thing is I could hear the doctor sometimes.
What'd he say?
He'd be talking. Oh, but there's a nurse watching you the whole time.
A nurse? She hot?
She's super fucking hot.
Really?
Stephanie, if you listen.
Is she really?
She was cute. Yeah, Joe. Wow. She was.
She's
stacked. That's where that POV came in handy.
She's got a corset on.
Yeah. No, so she was watching. She just watches you.
Mm.
And I was like, hey, would you videotape me? And she was like, yeah. And then I got him. She's like, you didn't do anything, so I didn't videotape. I was like, it wasn't really the point. But
you're supposed to catch me while I'm under. So I'd say, this is me under.
Yeah. A couple times.
She's got her own artistic direction.
She's got her own fucking, you know how they get.
Goddamn nurse.
So there's a nurse watching you. And then there was, they also use ketamine for pain management. If people have chronic pain that they can't get rid of.
Really?
Ketamine's a treatment.
Why ketamine for that?
I don't know. It's the same fucking thing.
That's
something's
so
going on. Yeah,
the not knowing why it's effective is very strange.
Yeah, and the dosage. My understanding is the dosage is way less than people would take on the street, and the fact that it's way less than people take on the street, and I was still fucking tripping my balls off, is I don't know what happens on the street.
Well, the street ones, they're snorting it, or they're smoking it.
Oh, so it's less. So maybe it gets cut down by the body.
Oh, you gotta imagine. It's getting processed by your stomach. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going through your organs and all that jazz. You're just shooting it right into your blood. You probably need way less.
Yeah. So
you should look into Lilly. Look into John Lilly, because he really was a fucking nut for ketamine. He became addicted to it.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Well, he apparently was...
I can't just imagine getting addicted to it, because it's pretty...
I know another guy who got addicted
filler.
To it.
Like,
it was
it's a, club.
A
day.
Well, a guy who was into it as a club drug, he got addicted to it and came out here. A buddy of mine took him out here to rehab. He was a fighter. Took him out to, there's a place in Thousand Oaks. It's a rehab place that's that specializes or did specialize in the, this is like early 2000s, specialize in ketamine. And he wound up dying from it. He died.
From withdrawal or
from
overdose?
Drug overdose, whatever kind of drug. Who knows if it was ketamine or a
yeah.
bunch of other things.
Or a combo, yeah.
With ketamine, but he had a real ketamine problem. So ketamine, like, recreationally
I
does carry
dude, I
with
wouldn't
it.
Know to... I wouldn't... It's like, you can't fucking trip.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want to... It's like, would you want to do shrooms every day?
Some people would, but it's like everything else. Like, you know, should you be able to get a tattoo? Yeah, of course. Well, some people want to tattoo every part of their body, including their eyeballs.
Great.
Okay. Well, that's not me, but
yeah.
As long as I can say I want to have a sleeve, I can't stop some guy from turning his eyeballs into Toad from the X-Men or whatever the fuck he's doing. What's
yeah.
that guy's name? It wasn't Toad, right? Something like that? Frog? What the fuck's his name?
Wolverine?
No, the froggy guy.
I don't think there was a frog in X-Men.
What was he? The guy with the fucking tail. Nightcrawler? No, there was Nightcrawler and there was another guy that was like a toad. Whatever. You know what I'm saying.
You know what the
Big,
fuck I'm
crazy
talking
West
about.
Crazy West Borland-looking
yeah.
black
yeah, I don't,
eyes.
I wouldn't. I have would have no interest in doing that. I would like to do it as little.
Is that a different one? What is that one? That's a different one.
So anyway. that's not the frog?
That's not the one I was talking about.
Well, who the fuck is that?
Hmm. That's the frog. I was talking about the...
oh, you're talking about somebody else. Got
the
it.
Other guy who's up there. The other guy is the guy with that guy right there. The guy to the left of that. The other guy. That guy. Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. That's what he looked like.
All right.
Whatever.
Yeah, I don't... I couldn't imagine doing it every... It was pleasant, but it wasn't that pleasant.
Because
the hangover's not... Like, I hate that fucking feeling of coming out of anesthesia. Like, I had a septum surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And... the guy didn't take out enough shit, but that's a whole other thing. But when I came out of it, it was in New York, like probably 8-9 years ago. When I came out of it, it was the fucking worst feeling coming out of the anesthesia, and I couldn't breathe. I was like, can I please get some water? I can't really breathe. And she was like, we can't give you water. It's that thing where they're like, Mr. Brandon, Mr. It's just like this jarring fucking thing where they're trying to wake you up. And I was like, please. And she's like, I can give you an ice cube. She gave me an ice cube. I hawked up a fucking blood pellet that was like, well, what if I hadn't asked for that shit? Like, I could have, that was dangerous.
So you had swallowed like a clot.
Basically, yeah.
That breathed in a clot. And
or,
got
yeah,
stuck.
Some like blood booger or
yeah,
something.
Dude, I
and it
put
was like,
some pictures on Twitter after I got my deviated septum done where I was blowing out these fucking silver dollar size hunks of blood and
yeah.
booger. Ooh.
Did you get enough meat?
Though.
The guy didn't take enough meat up.
Yeah, my guy was awesome. He did a great job.
I almost want to get it again.
Get it again.
All right.
I love it, man.
Now that I've come out of the fucking ketamine, maybe I can double up.
Having nose breathing, being able to breathe through my nose,
yeah.
that I didn't get that until I was like 40. Or 39,
yeah.
I think I had it done.
I still can't really breathe out of one of my nostrils. Yeah.
For me, it's magic.
Can you imagine the kind of shape I'd be in? If I had both nostrils?
Imagine. I'm terrified.
Fucking guy.
Fucking guy
fucking
running
guy,
marathons and
this
shit.
Guy's got two nostrils. He knows what to do with them.
Well, it's just nice to be able to breathe. Just to be able to breathe mm-hmm. out of your nose with your mouth closed. I was a mouth breather most of my life.
Yeah.
But apparently it's not an easy surgery, and some people just, it doesn't work right on them. You know, and some
does
people.
Does it grow back? That's the other
can,
thing I've heard.
You
it
can.
It grows back
can swell,
to like.
Can
but
swell.
But I've heard like it just repeats.
No, mine hasn't.
Okay.
Mine's
how long
been
ago was
7 years.
Okay.
And it's amazing.
Yeah.
They trim your turbinates, I think they're called,
yeah.
those big bones in there. And they also cut out a lot of calcified blood on me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mine was all like, there was like an x-ray. The guy's like, I don't think you need anything. And then he did like the x-ray. And there was so much like cartilage or whatever.
Blockage.
It was like cinnamon bunned
mm-hmm.
to fit.
Oh, God.
So I guess he took that out, but he didn't take out enough shit.
They say that there's a large percentage of people that deal with blocked septums. That it's super common.
Yeah.
Because your nose is so fragile.
Yeah.
You're whacking on a door, and all of a sudden it's bent, and now you don't breathe right for the rest of your life
yeah.
until you get an operation.
I've heard, whether it's true or not, that like a lot of it has to do with inbreeding. I really have. I've heard that Jewish people and Irish people have fucked up noses from inbreeding.
Really? Where'd you read that?
In fucking on Reddit, bro. Now, where do you think I fucking read it?
Well, you know how fighters get cauliflower ear?
Yeah, which is rough.
They get that with their nose as well. You get it with your nose.
Inside your nose?
Yeah. The soft tissue inside your nose bleeds and swells and fills with blood, and that blood hardens and calcifies.
And there's nothing you can...
Got to get in there and scrape it out. Got to get an operation.
They do anything for cauliflower ear?
Yeah. Yeah, they cut the ear, they flay it open, and then they scrape out all the calcification.
And stitch it right back up.
Mm-hmm.
Ear.
Yeah, it's just blood that becomes calcified. When blood leaks, like when you have breaks in the blood vessels, apparently, and it's under the surface of the skin, it swells up, it like fills up with blood, and then that blood hardens and becomes like calcium.
Someone I know was telling me that they woke up with vertigo.
Whoa.
And it turned out, because a friend of hers had had it for months, and they go, yeah, it turned out it was just a piece of dust in my inner ear. Whoa. So basically, if you ever wake up with vertigo, one of the ways you get rid of it is literally like trying to get water out of your head. You're trying to just jar the dust or whatever it is.
Whoa.
Like somersaults, fucking laying on your side. I swear to God, there was like somersaults is one of the cures.
Wow.
So if anyone wakes up with vertigo, get to fucking.
How weird
flipping.
Is it that your ears control your balance? Like somehow or another, your ears and your balance are connected.
Yeah.
And your nose and your taste buds are connected.
Yeah.
Yes. The fuck is going on with the human design? What a shit design.
Yeah,
and your balls are on the outside.
Yeah. That's what I've been saying about the no God thing.
You come, you can make a person.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
It's too wild.
It's too ridiculous. It's a trick. They tricked us. The fucks.
Yeah, so,
Damn tricks. So, look, man, I'm happy to hear that, you know, this is really working for you.
Yeah, I think I'm still not hoping that I have maybe 30 more percent upside.
To go?
Yeah.
More room?
I think with the SSRI stuff, like once that completely dissipates, yeah. But I'm like, it's more enjoyable from the POV than it was.
Would you recommend this to other people? Do you recommend this to other people?
Yeah, I mean, recommending a medical treatment, it's personal, but if you feel like, all I can tell you is I tried a bunch of shit and it's the reason they do ketamine. There's another one called TMS, which is the magnetic one. There's a guy in Chicago who does both at the same time.
Jesus Christ, this guy's a madman. What the fuck's he trying to do? Make a Superman?
And he...
Come out of it, you're psychic.
Yeah. So you're the doctor. There's a bunch of shit. And it's like, if you're just sick of it, I was just sick enough of it that I was like, I don't name the price, name the hardship. Because there's nothing... I'm just sick of it.
Well, you know, kudos to you for keep searching.
The transcranial magnetic stimulation, is covered by some insurance.
With magnets?
Yes.
On your head?
Yes.
And they don't know how it works. But they got it.
And I was lobbyists. On a show the other night, by the way. It was a science show, science/comedy show. Like, there were panelists that were scientists, panelists that were comics. A woman on the panel... she's involved in a magnet thing that increases people's sex drive forever.
Fucking chicks.
Yeah. shoot magnets and you're way hornier. And I was like, who
crazy.
Do you think? Who? But I said, I don't think men need it.
Right.
Because the dudes fuck your life
up. So the idea is you give it to women?
Yeah.
Like, it's a Spanish fly in magnet
basically,
form.
Basically, yeah.
So while your chick is asleep, you put a fucking magnet
thing
in her head, you
get your magnets out.
Joker.
And there are people online that were saying they could make it at home. Not the sex one, but the transcranial one. But
well, there's been all sorts of magnetic pulse to ease depression. Look at that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, what does it say?
Non-invasive procedure to help fight depression called transcranial magnetic stimulation, or TMS, uses magnetic pulse to stimulate brain cells that control mood. But they use that transcranial stimulation for a lot of different shit.
Right.
There was not magnetics, but electric. They had these electrodes they were attaching to people's brains that helped them learn shit quicker.
Mm-hmm.
there's all sorts of weird little hacks that you can use that help stimulate little areas of the brain that they covered on Radiolab. There was a Radiolab episode about this woman who went through a sniper school test. You know, where you're like,
I heard that one.
You see that one?
Yeah.
Yeah. That one was amazing. Listen to that one. That one was amazing because she did it, and then she did it the second time, and she's like, everything was in slow motion.
Yeah.
And it felt like it only took 5 minutes, and it was 20 minutes later.
She basically ate a zone pill.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
I'm in the zone now.
Yeah.
So,
it's amazing.
Yeah.
I love this. I love that there's so many people working on all these different ways to improve the way the brain functions, and they're kind of still in this infancy with it. They're fucking with it and adding pills and
I'm grateful just for the shit they've done so far. It's like, fucking thank you. Even for the pills that didn't work, it's like, fucking at least you're trying.
Yeah, that's really cool. I've never had a depression issue, I don't think. I mean, I think I might have when I was really young, but I don't have it. I definitely don't have it now. But I sympathize with it, and I know a lot of people who have had it, and I know a lot of people have had it, and they've come back, and they're much better. You know, Ari Shaffir is one that I always point to. Ari was severely depressed at one point in time, and you know, and now he's just amazing. Now he's the happiest fucker I know.
From shrooms, you think?
Had a lot to do with it. Success had a lot to do with it. Ari's like really successful now, and you know, he doesn't feel like he's on the outside anymore. He's not. He felt like, I think for a while, like that he wasn't being recognized. He was being recognized by us, you know, like all of our friends and like crowds would laugh at him, but the industry wasn't taking him seriously or he wasn't connecting yet.
I had another brain thing over 2 days. I think it was earlier this week where one day I was like, fucking no one cares about you. And the next day I like, it was a professional gripe where I'm like, do you feel like you don't get enough attention? All that shit. And then the next day I had the same thought, and then it was followed by, like, well, then fight. You know what I mean? Like,
you gotta fight
it. Yeah, like, yeah, it was like, then fucking do something about it. Whereas the day before, I was just, like, hopeless. Like, that's the thing, is, like, one of the depression things is, like, learned helplessness. Is a they think that was one of the things that, like, that was a behavioral thing, where it's like, you have to, like, when mice couldn't, when they realized they couldn't get out of a box, they just stopped trying. But then there were certain mice that they gave, I think, a chemical to that would like just fight until they died. But that was the thing of like, okay, like I wasn't getting that a month ago.
That learned victim mentality is a groove that's like carved in people, and some people it's become so prominent.
Yeah.
They just automatically drop right into that, and then they're a victim.
Yeah.
And they search for that. And then they use
they
it
look
for arguments.
Situations to, yeah.
They also use it in arguments. Like, they become a victim in the argument. It's super common. And you know, it's so self-defeating, but so it's so a normal part of, like, really weak thinking.
Yeah. But having said that, some of weak thinking is as chemical a problem as fucking diabetes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
exactly. And also, not everybody has the same exact fucking childhood and growing up experiences. So your formative experiences that you're having that's shaping your personality, what giant percentage of them are completely out of your control?
Yeah.
And how arrogant is it to assume that everybody had the experiences that you had? So you've gotten through them.
Yeah.
Everybody else, Henry Rollins, needs to pull themselves up by their bootstraps and not fucking shoot themselves like Robin Williams. Yeah. That pussy.
Fucking pussy.
Yeah, I mean, that's the crazy.
Well, that's
crazy
like when
talking.
People say it's like a depression's like a strength thing. It's like, if you're talking about mental fortitude, I've got a pretty good track record of like shit I've done. And same with Robin Williams. Talking about fucking not easy what he's done. Fucking write however many hours of stand-up he stole. no, but to write a ton of stand-up, to be that good an actor, to be just, his recall was fucking amazing. Like, he's got a good brain. So and he's not like a weak guy.
Well, it's good at some things, at least. You know, Mark Gordon, who's a good friend of mine, who's a doctor, he's an expert in traumatic brain injury and recovery from traumatic brain injury.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he talked about, he actually wrote a paper about this, about people that have gone through very significant operations where they've been under anesthesia for long periods of time and had like open heart surgery, that type of shit. There's a large percentage of them that experience some pretty significant depression after it's over. And they think it has to do with hormonal imbalances that occur after these traumatic.
I've heard that.
But
some people have like a kind of, it seems like Letterman had the opposite. Like, he had heart surgery and was like a new man. He was just appreciative and shit like that.
Well, that's true, too. You know, some people, they go through these near-death experiences and it wakes them up.
Yeah.
Like, they realize, hey, asshole, this is almost over. Maybe it's time to be nice to people.
Yeah.
Maybe appreciate, smell the flowers. You're fucking David Letterman, dude.
Yeah.
Go out and hug some folks, you know?
Yeah, that's, he started taking antidepressants.
Did he really?
Yeah, it was on Alec Baldwin's podcast. He talked about it. Like,
Alec Baldwin has a podcast?
Alec Baldwin had a podcast. I don't know if it came back. That guy's got golden pipes, first of all. So that's
the way he talks.
A joy.
Is that what you're saying?
This is Alec Baldwin. Like, it's a joy to listen to that podcast. Yeah. That's an easy hour
But his ego would keep
fucking
me from enjoying
distracted, it's like, don't pay attention to that part. You're listening to fucking golden pipes. I'll take an ego with pipes like that.
What if you were paparazzi? Would you hold a grudge?
Yeah, I think that's what made him. It was on a public radio station in New York, and they were like, you can't be saying faggot and all that stuff. Like, sorry, man. Just can't say it. Can't do it. But yeah, so he was talking about on Alex's podcast, and it was like he went on them shortly after that. I think he had shingles too, and he was just miserable.
Mm.
And they were like, go on it. And he's like, really? And he said, like, it's, I don't know what the analogy was, but he's like, it was like I had clumpy hair that I couldn't get a comb through, and now I could get the comb through it or something. I don't remember what the, but something similar to that.
But he's kind of chubby. And it doesn't look like he exercises, and I bet he doesn't eat
Letterman?
Right. No.
Oh, no, I'm talking about Letterman. Letterman talked about it on Alec's podcast.
Alec Baldwin's not on antidepressants.
He's
Letterman
on podcasts.
Oh, okay. Well, Letterman also, this is post-open heart surgery?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
But I'd heard stories about him where he was, you know, I'd hear stories where he wouldn't be happy with the monologue, mm-hmm. and he'd just be banging his head against the wall.
Yeah, I heard that, too. I heard that from my friend who's his assistant.
Yeah.
He fucking hated everything he did.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why he was the best.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is.
Yeah. He would, yeah. There was a story in that late night book, The Late Shift, that I think it was in that book, but Peter LaSalle had a big house in Malibu.
And who's Peter LaSalle?
He was the exec producer of The Tonight Show and like an exec producer on Late Night with David Letterman, and then he became one on the new one too. But so he was sort of like Letterman's go between for Johnny. And he had a beautiful, and Letterman was like, man, I could never have a house like this. And he goes, you make 10 times the money I make. Like, you could totally. And he's like, really? Like, it just never occurred to him that things were good and he could do well. Huh. Oh, another thing, I'm more apt to cry now as well. In a good way. Not like, I saw Inside Out and cried.
Aww.
Which isn't like
a
good,
movie.
Yeah, sweet. But like,
so you feel more?
Yeah. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So far.
I'm happy for
you.
Or
you get addicted and die.
I think
either
it's
one.
Awesome. I'm happy for you.
Yeah, I'm happy for
myself. I appreciate you coming on here and talking about
it.
Well,
no, because it's fucking, because the thing with therapy that it's very, first of all, people don't know it's very hard to find a good therapist. Like, people are too quick to go, like, yeah, they're fine. You got to shop around, which people don't realize. And with antidepressants, you got to shop around. And if none of them work, keep looking for other shit.
Mm.
Like, don't just go, I can't do it.
Right.
So yeah. But I look forward to the rest of my life, Joe.
I look forward to hanging out with you, Neil Brennan. You're a bad motherfucker.
Thanks, buddy.
I appreciate it, man.
You too.
I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you talking about this. Yeah. It takes a lot of courage.
Oh, yeah. No problem.
Neil motherfucking Brennan. Follow him on Twitter and Instagram. And website? You got a website?
NeilBrennan.com. I don't know what's going on there.
Nothing
happens. It's filled with, like, raccoons and shit at this point.
Nobody uses websites anymore. Websites are all, like, social media. Social media is taken. It's too effective. All right. Fuckers. We'll be back with podcast number 666 on Monday. And who's the guest? Duncan Trussell, of course. Pray Satan or Allah or whoever you like. All right. Love you, fuckers. See you soon. Bye-bye. Big kiss.